Steve, thanks. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. It's the Wednesday version of our program. We're 312-981-7200. I'm Bill, that's Wendy. I'm concerned about you, by the way.
Why?
Very concerned about you. In the past, you've admitted that you are obsessed with food. You've said that on occasion, that you're obsessed with food. In the last 35 or 40 seconds, you found out that our guest that we'll have on in a half an hour just came from having breakfast at Manny's Deli, and you keep saying, now I'm so jealous. I would love to go to Manny's Deli. And while you were saying that, there was a commercial that was read for Taco Bell where they talk about the quesalupa, and you go, that's what I want is a quesalupa. I got to get me a quesalupa.
I am easily suggestible.
Yeah.
And I forgot to have dinner last night, so I'm pretty hungry tonight.
You just forgot today to have dinner?
Yeah, we had a lovely food drop-off from Bar Louie yesterday.
At lunch.
And I wasn't hungry at dinner.
It's such a female thing to say, I think, that I forgot to eat.
I don't look like I've missed a meal, okay? And usually I don't. I was not hungry last night, caught up on the X-Files, and...
Dinner just didn't happen? You just didn't... But the rest of your family had dinner.
I don't really know.
You're not sure.
Was there a moment last night where you're like, hey,
what's missing?
Oh, you know what I did? I made pasta burro for the kids, which is just buttered noodles.
Pasta and donkey together, the way people like.
We do that with Ryan up here sometimes.
And there was a leftover corned beef sandwich that I got for Michael a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So he had that. They were all
Everybody was nourished except you. You forgot.
Well, I wasn't hungry.
All right.
So I woke up and got some cafeteria eggs, which is better than the cafeteria sushi.
But even with the cafeteria eggs you're having, you're jealous about Manny's Deli and Taco Bell's quesalupa.
Those probably are the two favorite things in my world. You know, like I said, growing up in Brookfield, I'm Brookfield's favorite daughter, even though they're unaware of that.
They have no idea.
Don't live there anymore. There was a Stein's Deli in Lyons for many, many years.
I've heard of that. I know what that is, yeah.
When that left many, many years ago, I was unable to get corned beef. I mean, you can get it at the deli at the Jewel or Mariano's.
You want authentic.
I want it on raw. I wish I was Jewish.
Well, you can fill out some forms. I'll see what I can do.
All right.
I can't guarantee anything.
It's not right away, but you can make it happen.
Right.
I love matzo ball soup. And it's funny because Bill, who's half Jewish, there's a listener who gets crazed every time
I
say that. So
I know.
I say it every day.
I know.
You're half Jewish. And every once in a while, I say, hey, let's go 11 City Diner. Let's go get some deli. And you're like, I don't like that food.
It doesn't do much for me. It really doesn't.
And our guest didn't go to Manny's. It was just Rick Geezer. Is he on with us?
No. He does promotions for Zanies, so he brought our guest
by. And Manny's, evidently.
And Manny's also, as his sidebar. Yeah, he's taken Manny's on as a client. Yeah.
And Taco Bell is one of my favorite fast food places. Kevin,
sure.
You would agree, wouldn't you?
It's one of the best.
Honestly.
But do you think maybe that you forgetting to have dinner last night could play into this?
Oh, yeah.
Just a little?
But,
yeah.
You know, even if I had dinner, like I said, I don't look like
more.
I've missed a meal.
There's always time for a quesalupa.
Right. You make time for a quesalupa, Steve.
It almost sounds like a Doris Day song, doesn't it?
Quesalupa, salupa.
Oh, if they don't do that at Taco Bell.
Whatever will Gene Krupa.
That's probably not the lyric they'll go with, but it's a good one.
What else are you going to rhyme with lupa?
There's not a whole lot that rhymes with it. All right, it's going to be a challenge to come up with something.
I'll take Gene Krupa to block. Yeah, I'm obsessed with food. I won't eat food if I know that my family members like it and they can't be there with me.
There have been a few times here during the lunch hour that I've said, hey, how about this place or this place? And you get a big starry eye on your face, starry look in your face, and you go, oh, I can't because... And then you mention one of the boys or your husband also likes that. So you won't eat in a restaurant that someone in your family likes because you feel like you're cheating on them somehow.
100%
But they
right.
would, you know, they'd be okay with it, wouldn't they? If you just casually said,
I don't know, I can't do it, Bill.
Can I suggest something? Maybe you go there and you bring them a little sample of something. You just get something from the menu and you bring it home. You could do that.
So you're not planning, like if you were to go today, you weren't planning on going tonight with your family, right?
To where?
To wherever you're talking about, this restaurant that you like?
To either
Manny's Deli.
Manny's Deli?
Yeah. No, I'm not going there. I wanted it for a minute. It gave me joy.
Just the idea of it.
Yeah.
Not actually physically going and purchasing and eating the food, just the idea of being there.
I like corned beef and pastrami. You know, usually I'm a woman who doesn't like to mix her meat.
Right.
You can mix pastrami and corned beef all day, and I'm good to go.
All right.
With a little horseradish, Rye bread.
Is that the attraction of it? Is
yeah.
The ability? Yeah. All right. All right. I feel bad that they didn't know. If Rick Geezer had known of your love for this place, I'd be shocked if he didn't pick you up a little mini sandwich. A 3-ouncer.
I have ADHD. I'm already on to something else. I'm already over it. I mean, for one second, I was like, you saw it happen. It's like, oh, I love corned beef. Oh,
right.
I'd like a quesalupa.
While
hey, let's talk about that iPhone.
While you were fantasizing about Manny's Deli, I could hear wheels spinning in your head like, or Taco Bell is also good. I could see. I watched that.
Taco Bell is the best, and just such a variety. I have not tried the crunchy breakfast Dorito or whatever it is, the crunch wrap.
They just put the words Arito on anything.
Or Lupa.
I had napkin Arito. They just put Arito on stuff.
Spoonalupa.
Spoonalupa.
They have that.
Wow. And when just getting back to this, because I have not taken my meds yet, Kevin came out with Prince.
Yeah.
Vanity died.
How about that?
Very young, I feel so bad. Some kind of kidney issue she has been having.
I didn't know she was sick.
She's, I believe, only 54 years old.
Yeah.
And that was really sad. She was the most beautiful girl.
Wasn't she?
To ever hang around with Prince.
Or Apollonia was the other girl who hung out with Prince. And she was also very attractive. But, Vanity just kind of vanished. Sadly, and then died, I think, on Monday. This is the worst year for musicians. For the world of music, the deaths just keep piling up and piling up. It's the strangest thing.
57 years old, Denise Matthews, and she was pretty amazing, and 57 years old, and she had denounced her rock and roll world, her sexiness, and became a reverend.
Yeah, she was very religious toward the end.
So very. That was very sad. So I thought that was why we came out with some Prince music.
Is that why, Kevin?
We missed it on Prince Spaghetti Day. See again.
No, today's
food.
Prince Spaghetti Day, Wednesday.
It's not Wednesday.
You sure?
Oh, you need a chalupa.
I thought it was Thursday.
No,
I forgot dinner on Tuesday, and you forgot Wednesday on Wednesday.
Can we regroup? I need some Diet Coke and my ADHD meds, and we can start the show then?
All right,
Is that all right? We'll start.
We will officially start in just moments. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. Today's Wednesday, yeah.
Shoot.
Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know what just occurred to me? This is strange. If you name any kind of food, there's some national chain that sells it. You know what I mean? If you want Mexican food or Italian food, you name the food. There's some chain that you could find anywhere in the country. But for some reason, delicatessen food is immune to that. There's no chain of delicatessens that goes countrywide, is there?
Well, there are, like, there's Jason's Deli. I know that there's...
That have more
that's
than one
not,
location.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not really Jewish deli, is it? Do they have matzo ball? That, to me,
oh, yeah.
is...
Yeah,
Jason's
I think,
Deli
I think
does?
They do, don't
I don't
they,
think
Steve?
They do.
I thought... But it's not like, but even Jason's, even though there's a few locations, it's not like they haven't popped up all over the place, you know?
Right.
Like Taco Bell is with Mexican food, or Olive Garden is with Italian food, where no matter what city you're in, you can find one. I wonder why no one's done that with delicatessen food.
When you Jewish about upon a star, that's what I would call it.
That would be a great name for it.
What is it again, Wendy?
Thank you, because I screwed it up.
What is it?
When you do wish upon a star.
Oh, that's better.
Can't miss.
Thank
that's
you
can't
very
miss
much.
Right there.
Deli
Partons.
Oh,
do you think that
come
would be,
on. Open one.
I wouldn't open one. I would
You'd
open
have to
two.
Open two. Yeah, they wouldn't come at one.
Or you could sell two for one.
They'd be right next to each other.
Oh, gosh.
One would be slightly larger than the other.
Deli Talk. Welcome to it, Judy. How's it going?
Oh, I'm nervous because I never called the show before.
Don't
oh,
be nervous.
Come on, we'll talk you through it. It's no big deal. You like deli?
Yeah.
Wow. You really like deli. Wow.
Are you Jewish?
No.
See, I'm not either, and I never really grew up with a lot of Jewish food, and now that I've tasted a matzo ball,
you're in.
I don't want to ever go matzo-less.
You got to just step back. You got to step back.
What is it you like so much about it, Judy?
The taste.
Yeah.
The pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes you feel good.
Sure. Absolutely. And how often would you say you have it? Is it a daily, a weekly, a monthly thing? How often?
Not very often, no.
Not enough.
Where do you go, may I ask? Is that a personal question?
Yeah. Did you say trick question? No, it's not a trick question.
No, I thought it was too personal of a question, but I want to find a good deli.
Why would I call if it was that personal?
Yeah, Wendy.
I don't know. This is my first time answering. Your first time calling? My first time answering.
Because I like deli and I like you.
Oh.
I like Bill, too.
Oh, you're very kind. Very
so
nice.
Where do you go? What deli?
It's in Naperville. It's in a little strip mall by the Ogden 6 Theater,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Schmaltz.
Oh, I love the name.
You could just say the...
A-L-T-Z or T-S.
Yeah. Steve?
Probably safe to just say the deli in Naperville.
Right. Well, no, you know what? I think Naperville has a couple, actually.
Do they?
I think they do, yeah. I know there's
I don't have the address and stuff because I can't see the drive, and my sister drives, and I don't want to call her.
Oh, call her. Tell her you'll treat her to deli, and she'll take you.
I'd say no to that.
Yeah, she'll take me, but then I'll forget what she said, and I won't be able to tell you.
Well, listen, Judy, you call us whenever you want, okay? Now the first time's over with. It wasn't so bad, was it?
I don't know. I'll have to try.
All right, you can.
I just wanted you to know that they got really good corned beef, and you can make your pastrami corned beef sandwich however you like.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a menu there that has like 96 different sandwiches. And at the end of the menu, they say, if you don't like that one, make one up. And if we can't make it, you don't want it.
Beautiful.
All right, I will try that out. Schmaltz.
In Naperville. Yeah.
Thank you.
In Naperville, if you can find the Ogden 6 Theater, it's in that strip mall with the hickory ham.
The honey baked ham?
Yeah, honey baked ham is in there, so then you'll know you're in the right place.
You'll find it. Put it on your GPS, or your JPS, I guess, in this instance. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Judy. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and this is what I meant. Joe, why don't you deliver the name of the restaurant that Bill should open?
Okay, I think it should be When You Wish Upon a Star.
That's it, yeah.
That's better.
Has a little better ring to it.
Doesn't it have a nice ring, though?
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't go there? That's
Although,
perfect.
Although, I still like Bill's Deli Parton.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. I've never had Jewish food, though, so you guys got to...
Oh, you got to try it.
Joe,
have you seen the challah in Deli Parton? Oh, my God. It's like two big bubblas.
Oh, man. Don't say that until after you've ordered and been given your food, please, because they will bar you. You'll be like Paul McCartney at a Tiga party.
How about that?
How about that?
Thank you for calling, Joe.
You don't let Paul McCartney into your party?
Here's the thing. He was not on the list. I get that. But it's Paul McCartney. And the bouncer knew that it was Paul McCartney.
Right.
That's what's weird. It's one thing if it's like, I don't know who this Paul McCartney guy is. You let Paul McCartney in.
Into anything he wants. When my wife was giving birth to my daughters, if Paul McCartney had knocked on the delivery room door, you go, yeah, Paul McCartney can come in. Bring Paul McCartney in.
I wouldn't let him in there.
Where was he refused entry?
There was a party, an after Grammys party, that, you know who Tyga is?
Tyga with a Y. Ow.
So Tyga was performing at this party, and Paul McCartney and Beck, and who else? There was a third musician, the drummer for the Foo Fighters,
yes.
I believe, right?
Yes.
So they go, the TMZ has the footage of this. They go to the door, they knock at the door, they see that it's Paul McCartney, and they don't let him in. So they're all joking around about it, and Paul McCartney goes, how much of a VIP do you have to be to get into this party? And then they go back to the door, and they still don't let him in. And he's Paul McCartney.
I don't understand that at all.
No.
Now, Tyga was asked about it because Jimmy Kimmel did a funny little bit about it.
At the beginning of his show last night, yeah.
And wouldn't let Tyga into his right. audience. See, first of all, congratulations to Jimmy Kimmel's staff for booking that right away and hopping on that. And for Tyga playing along.
Right. That was all very cool. And Tyga is not to blame. And I know I say those words at the beginning of almost every show. Tyga is not to blame. But today, I mean it. You can't blame him. He wasn't at the door. He wasn't the doorman.
He was hired to play that party.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really his party.
Right. But you see on Paul McCartney's face the look of, I've never been turned away for anything. You could just see it. He's cool about it, but he's so not used to being told no. He just walks away. I'm sure they found another party to go to. I'm positive. But how weird is it to look at Paul McCartney and go, sorry, man, I can't get you in. No room for you, Paul McCartney.
Especially with Beck and some Foo Fighter fame.
Right.
Because that's right. Contemporary, that's current, right. That's hitting all your genres.
But Beck kind of looks like a guy. Beck looks like everybody. Like, you know a guy who looks like Beck.
Yeah.
So you look out there and you see him and you go, oh, yeah, that's Mike from down the street. I know Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you? But that's Paul McCartney. Nobody looks like Paul McCartney. Let him in.
Let him in.
Do me a favor.
I see what you did.
Do me a favor. Open the door and let him in.
God, right. You're good.
We'll take a quick
break. Dolly Parton's now just open. Someone stole.
8 great locations, one near you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll check in with Steve. Steve has the news for you. And then in a little bit, Kenny Rogerson, very funny guy, stops by. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Before I throw it to you, Bill, I would like to say that there are about 10 listeners that said boy and girl twins cannot be identical. Can people tell when we're kidding?
I didn't think you were kidding when you said that, Wendy.
We know that if you're truly an
identical
twin.
Do you mean that sincerely, Steve?
I did. I missed it. I'm sorry.
You have to either both be boys or both be girls.
Yeah. That's the way. Identical twins is when the egg splits and it's identical.
Right.
The other one is when two little eggs come down the hoop and go into the uterus.
Fraternal, although I think if it's girls, sororital would be more correct, but that's just me. I could be wrong. You know who's here is Kenny Rogerson. Kenny is a stand-up comic, and Kenny, I'm not saying this because you're here, but when I did stand-up, I saw different comics every week. You were and still are one of the best club comics working anywhere
thanks.
In the country. You really are, and you're
thanks.
At Zany's for the rest of this
still
week. How
working.
Are you?
I'm good. You know, as I told someone, you know, it's an art form in itself to be doing this 38 years and be totally unknown. I should have been a... it's hard to do. I should have been a cat burglar or a serial killer. Somewhere anonymity is a plus.
Right.
You know?
No, you chose show business.
What did he look like? I don't know.
He was here.
Average guy. Soft-spoken.
Yeah. Now, here's a nice twist in your life. When I worked with you, it was at Who's On First in Elmhurst, and it was about 25, 26 years ago.
Yes.
You would do a thing where you would go up on stage, and you would do about an hour's worth of show, and you would bring a bottle of something,
tequila. I was
a lot
very
of times,
much
tequila.
Cuervo Gold?
Whatever they had.
Oh.
A lot of times it was Pepe Lopez or any whatever.
Just the house.
Listen, it was free. You don't go, is this all you have for free? You know, at those points, when you're 22, you go, this is a good tequila, isn't
sure.
it? Pepe Lopez?
Sure. But you would go up on stage with a bottle of some alcohol, like you said, usually tequila.
Yeah.
You would drink that, and then throughout the show, people would continuously buy you shots. And I was amazed that, number one, you're still alive today. I didn't see that coming. I'm shocked that you're still
Neither
alive.
Neither did I.
But it was amazing. You would still function and still be really, really funny.
Yeah, that was part of the problem. You know,
wow.
I could still function and still be really funny. For me, at the times, it was like, okay, how messed up can I become and still pull this off? That was part of the challenge.
Really?
It really was. And it was just, it was a sickness.
Were you scared when you gave up drinking that you wouldn't be able to pull it off, or you were confident enough to know
No, it was scary. It was scary because I'd never done it before. And I always had a cigarette in one hand and a drink in the other. And when I stopped doing both of those, I go, what do I do with my hands now? And I still now, to this day, have a bottle of water, and that's my cigarette. And I do a joke, and I'll kind of take a drink of water. I'll mess around with this. I have to have something to fiddle with.
Sure.
The
well, there's options,
something.
But some of them are not pleasant. You know that.
Yeah,
you get stopped a lot of those.
Yes, he quit drinking and smoking, but look what he does now.
They call it
Is
a one-man show. You know that.
One-man show.
Shouldn't we be getting tokens for this?
So there was. It's
say hey, I'm in the front row.
It's not like Gallagher, is it?
Yeah,
this
right.
is worse.
Oh, Bill.
No, at some point though, you made an effort. You said, "I got to stop this."
It was a long effort.
Yeah.
I started in '83. It was the first time I tried to get sober, but I had no friends.
Oh.
I mean, literally, I didn't know anybody who didn't do drugs and drink.
Really?
People I knew in business were doing blow.
Yeah.
And drinking.
Yeah.
You know, and all my football buddies from high school and all the comics, every comic. In Boston in those days was like I didn't know anybody to hang around with that wasn't I mean you could meet people if you went to a meeting or something
sure.
but I didn't find them anywhere near as fun as the people I'd been hanging out with
and there was no internet to get up you know like blanddating.com
yeah,
or something
no, there was
like
nothing.
That
there was nothing so yeah it was a long I made that 11 months and then that went off for a while and then I met this flight attendant who I was still crazy about and I really tried to stop and that's when you know you have a problem when you're not having fun at it anymore and you're still doing it
yeah
like I'm not smoking cigarettes I go why am I smoking this is disgusting I'm not even enjoying it I used to run. I used to love going out for like a 6 mile run and then lighting up and smoking. It was
really
the best one of the day. Oh, because all your blood is all wide open.
Sure.
It just shoots right through you.
It's and great. You earned it.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
you know,
that's
you work
exactly
out,
right.
You have a smoke.
See that? I don't have a problem. I work out every day.
Were the guys who were your friends, were they encouraging to you to stop? Or did they say, no, you're not part of the gang anymore?
No, that's exactly right. Well, the first time I quit, my best friends were like, they treated me like, what, you know, can't hang around with us? I go, I'm trying not to drink, man. I don't want to live in this place where you guys all drink. We have a tank of nitrous oxide in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, I live with a bunch of guys at a place called the Barracks in Boston. And it was like every comic had a key to it. Paul Kelly came out here, and Danny Sturts. Danny Sturts came out to Boston, and Danny was in a cab one time. He comes up, pulls the door, he goes, oh, man, I lost the key. And the cab driver goes, don't worry, I got one. He was a friend of ours who drove a cab. He just happened to get him.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. The key is you kept trying. I mean,
it
quitting
took me
smoking,
29
drinking.
Years to finally get off the cocaine and the booze, but I'm no quitter. But it was, you know, you'd go for a while, and then you'd fall apart, and then you'd go for a while, and you'd fall apart, and then finally one day I finally got it, and that was coming up on 11 years, I think. I don't know. I don't keep track.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good
it's kind of a miracle. I'm not a big religious guy, but I go, this is definitely, somebody's definitely been watching me. I don't know who or what it is, but I think maybe they just have the one client.
Maybe that could be it.
Or they pay really close attention, or I'm their only guy. You know? Like Clarence.
Right, from It's Wonderful Life?
It's Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Are there periods that you just flat out don't remember? Did it ever get to that?
Oh, there are decades I flat out don't
remember. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, there's times. I was trying to write a book, and I remember just about all the Chicago stuff, because that was a little, that wasn't the hard narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. And that, when I got to the 80s and I got into certain things, I went, oh, man, this is bringing up a lot of horrible, like watching the movie Blow, or even worse was, what was the movie about the crack dealer? Why can't I think of it?
Mary Poppins?
Not Scarface.
No, not the movie, the TV show, Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That I couldn't watch because it built up so much anxiety.
I bet it did.
The lying and the trying to move around. He wasn't even a drug addict. He was just selling it. But you go, oh, God, yeah, you did that. You know, you lied to this one to try to get more drugs from this. Oh, it was just horrible.
Talk about anxiety. That's what gave it to you, huh?
Yeah, it really did. It really did. Just trying to move in that. You've just lied to this girl, and now you're lying to your parents. Oh, it was a nightmare.
What about career-wise, because from the week that you and I worked together, and like I said, it was a long time ago, it was 25 years ago, but your persona was that guy. It was the I'll do anything, I'll drink, I'll drug it up.
Drink first and ask questions later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you
That was what was going on though at the time.
Well, you know what the thing is, and I've talked to friends of mine that are sober, go, look, we were addictive personalities, and every wrong impulse was totally rewarded. You know, you drank too much, here's some free booze. You like Coke, here's some free pizza.
Right.
You met women, every wrong impulse was totally backed up because they didn't care. As long as you came in and were funny, they'd give you free stuff. So,
isn't that something?
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
There was a club, and I won't say where it is. It's not far. It's in the Midwest. That when the week was over, they wanted to pay the other comic and I in cocaine.
Yeah, there was a couple
what?
Of guys.
Yeah.
A guy in Florida tried to do that, too.
Yeah.
And I'd go, give me my money. I can buy my own cocaine.
Okay, but wait, Bill, you've never done cocaine, so why would he even think to pay you in that?
He could have paid me in Count Chocula. That would have made sense. But he brought us into the office. We go into the office, and he's got the money on the desk. He goes, you can have this. And he opens up a drawer and holds it up, and he goes, or you can have this.
Right.
And the other comic and I looked at each other. We go, we'll go with door number one.
There were
one.
That many comics that were doing blow Jeez. That some guys would take the payoff in snow.
Yeah.
And I never did. I go, first of all, I don't know you.
Right.
You know,
right.
I know guys. I know professional dealers.
Exactly.
I know
Use
guys
your own
who just
money.
Rode this ashore. I'm going to take your Iowa cocaine. Well, that hasn't been stepped on.
Let's take a quick break. Kenny Rogerson is here. Go see him. If you haven't seen Kenny, you need to see him. He's at Zany's in Chicago. That's tonight and tomorrow. Well,
God, the whole month of February.
16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 23. Zany's in Rosemont, the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th. Zany's.com has the complete schedule.
Yeah.
That's your best bet. We'll be back in a minute. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Now I'm hungry. Kenny Rogerson is here. He's appearing at Zany's in Chicago this week. Zany's in Rosemont next week. Go to Zany's.com for information. You started in Boston.
Started here.
Did you start here?
I started here. The first time on stage was a place called Sylvester's.
Where was that?
That was down on like Belmont and Lincoln, I think. It's going back to 70, whatever.
What do you remember about that?
I'll tell you what I remember. Here's how old I am. It was a converted Esso station.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was
sure.
Esso. Not Exxon, Esso.
Well, Esso had the best sight lines of any of, oh,
of all the
filling
comedy
stations.
Of all your filling station comedy.
Yep.
They could have been big. Had they not branched off into oil, I think they would have been the best. Bigger than the improv.
Way bigger than the improv. Yeah.
Yeah. I started here. That was my first. I did that once, and then I didn't go back for another year. And then it came a friend of mine named Kyle T. Hefner, who's been on a bunch of actors, been on a bunch of stuff. But anyway, he said, you should come down to Zany's to do open mic night. And I came down. This guy, Jim Fay, who was a second
city. Remember Jim, yeah.
He was hosting, and I would sign up, and every time I was on last. And I would fear it. All week long, I'd be sick to my stomach going, God, I hope it snows. I don't want to go up there. It was so frightening. I did not want to go up there. Really, without tequila, I would have never gone up.
And if you were last, you were just drinking and waiting for your turn.
Yeah. Also, you went from 150 people to the wait staff and the two comics.
Oh. Yeah.
And I rented the room in with Jim. We were roommates for a while. I go, why did you do that to me? He goes, well, you know, I thought you had something. I just wanted to see if you really wanted it. I go, well, that's really sweet of you, but you could have put me on the middle once or twice.
Just for fun.
Instead of let me bomb every time.
But think about the dichotomy of being sick to your stomach about going up to perform, but still having the yearning to do it at the same time.
Yeah, it was. It took a year after Sylvester's, but yeah, I'd go down there, and it would be all day, all week long. I was parking cars in Evanston in the garage, and I'd be going, oh, God, I hope it snows this weekend. I don't want to do it. And one time my friend Bill goes, are you going to go? I go, oh, you know, I don't really have a ride. He goes, I'll give you one. I went,
curses for
curses
again.
For having friends.
But was that just excitement to get on stage? I know you said
no,
you're sick
it was
to your
total
stomach,
fear.
But...
Total fear.
Really?
There's no worse feel. I can't watch open mic nights to this day because it breaks my heart because I can feel that feeling when you're just dying and you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you get one laugh and you think, oh, I've got them. And rather than bailing out, you stay too long at the fair because you think you're going to start rolling and it just dies even worse. You get that one laugh and you think, oh, I'm on a roll now. And it just goes down, you know, it goes down, down, down.
I used to go to the Comedy Womb in Lyons to see my friend Carla Felicia perform open mic nights, free pizzas on Thursdays. And even when somebody wasn't funny, I would always have to laugh and clap because I just felt like I needed to do that.
It's not a good feeling. Even to this day, I've been doing this 30 whatever years now. If it doesn't go over, it's no fun. I don't take it, but I still go, oh, really? It's still just that. You still want it to be the best you can be, but...
But that's good,
you
though.
You reach a certain...
Isn't it?
I don't ever want to become complacent.
Right.
You know? I know people that go... Really? You haven't changed a word of your act in 30 years. It's in the same order.
Right.
You breathe in the same spots. You know, mix up the breath. You know, modulate. Do something different. But really, I go, to me, that's like working at a factory. And I've got probably, I don't know, I try to, every time I come out, I've got 10 or something new minutes, and I go, oh, I don't have enough stuff. Some stuff you've been doing, especially you're doing cruise ships.
Sure.
And you're doing shows for children. So it's like, who has a cat? And every time I say that, a piece of my comedy soul just drops out on the stage. If you listen with the right kind of ears, you can hear plunk.
Have you done shows just for kids, exclusively for kids?
Not just for kids, but strollers and babies and children in the room. You on Carnival Cruise Lines.
There's a family show.
It's family friendly.
But the funny thing is, having worked with you, and again, it was a long time ago, I can't envision your show being played for 5 and 6 and 7 year olds. It doesn't.
Believe me, I'm pulling out stuff that I used in 19. Who has a cat? Cat and dog stuff.
That stuff,
stuff about Disney World. I go, this is like 30 years old. But you know, everybody's out there now. I was in a hotel in Florida, and I ran to my friend Lowell Sanders, and he goes, let's have dinner. And we sit down, and 2 minutes later, around the corner comes Bruce Smirnoff and John Caponera.
Yeah.
Who I hadn't seen in 10 years. So I go, oh, well, are any of us on the same ship? No.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Right, right.
Because
right.
It's the tedium that kills you in those things and the 20-hour travel days.
Yeah. It's not as glamorous as you would think.
No.
It isn't.
You don't get time to hang by the pool and lay out and stuff?
You know, the thing is, you can. I find that boring. I've never been like a big beach guy unless there was a volleyball or a football game where there was body surfing or something. Just sitting there. When I was drinking, sure, I could do that anywhere.
Yeah.
But, pass out.
And once they've seen your show, now you're on a ship with them. They just want to talk to you.
Sure.
Weird, isn't it?
They don't mean anything by it. Yeah, and I've never been like a fame guy. I never really cared about the notoriety. The money I wanted, but I didn't realize that I had a lot of it. I didn't realize that came hand in hand. But and they ask you the same question. They don't mean anything by it, but
right. Yeah,
I write my own material. No, I don't have a team of writers sitting at home to come up with that cat and dog bit. I've overpaid that guy. I got to tell you.
Some of the best writers in the land crafted that for you. Yeah, I know that for a fact, right, Kenny. Come on.
Has it changed for you? And Bill, you're not doing stand-up anymore, but I know a lot of times you guys would have a big old loose leaf and write down some of your material and stuff. Do you do it on a computer now?
No.
Do you save files or do you still do the old school?
I haven't really written that much. Yeah, I know. I still write it on a notebook.
Yeah.
You know, for me, seeing it visually. And then I might type up a set later if I was doing like Last Comic Standing I did a couple years ago. If I'm doing a Conan, and I'll type it up and, you know, just so I know the next, if I do it another time, which hasn't happened, but I'll know what I did that first time. You know, like I used to do charities with Dennis Leary every year, and I'd go, God, like, what did I do last year? And they'd go, no one's going to remember. I go, I'm not sure.
You would know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My friend Lenny Clark and I said one time, we're doing Dennis.
Love him.
Thing. Yeah. He said, we're doing this hockey arena. I go, let's write 5 new minutes. This is like our 10th year doing it. Let's both write 5. He goes, all right. So I sit down and I'm writing, I'm thinking of things I'm writing and go, this is funny. This is really good. This is really coming out almost too easy. But I go, this is really good. So I get in the limo with him. He goes, what do you got? I start reading. He goes, yeah, that's mine.
I'm like, oh, no.
No wonder it seemed good. It was flowing out of my pen. So I go, that's right. It's your old bit. I forgot about that.
Oh, no. That's not going to work.
What do you got? And I go, well, that's Don's and that's mine. He goes, forget. Let's just keep doing our same stuff.
So I
bailed on it.
What do you do when life gets weirder than art? And I will use the current presidential campaign. It's almost like shooting ducks in a barrel, isn't it?
You know, I don't do a lot of political humor because they anger me so much.
Do they?
You know,
yeah.
Like Lewis Black has a way of turning his anger into funny. Me, I just want to slap them all. I really do. If you know, those debates are so hideous.
Yeah.
You're not going to change anyone's mind.
No, you're not. No one. George Carlin said, no one's ever changed anybody's mind politically from that 12 p.m. spot at the store. You know?
Yeah.
Lenny Bruce changed nothing other than we could all swear on stage. Yeah. He didn't change anything politically all that much. You know, there's just, it takes a slow thing. But I watched the Republican debates. I haven't watched the Democratic ones because I don't know who I'm going for there. But the Republican ones, I go, this is like watching seventh graders argue.
It's just mean.
You're a liar. No, you're a liar.
Right.
You know, it's like, really?
That's what it is.
You know?
I'm just going to slap each other.
They'll build the wall and make the Mexicans pay for it. Well, could you tell me how you're going to do that? That's what I'd like
to know. It's impossible.
Because if you've got a plan, I'd like to hear it. But, you know, the Chinese built the wall. Pretty good size. I think the Mongols invaded them at some point, went right over them. Yeah, that was a nice wall you put up. We're camping there now.
It is like grade school. When I ran for class president, I said, you know, I'm going to put a candy machine in the cafeteria. You just say these things and no one's going to hold you to it. That's what it sounds like.
And no one, and they're really not debates. They're just give us your talking points and you give us your talking points.
Sure.
No one debates. It's not like, you know.
It's terrible.
Not like Lincoln and whoever. It's just
Stephen Douglas.
Stephen Douglas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodness. Has just, anyone ever
history class Stern. Just paid off I'm for just, me? Finally,
I'm just reading a team of rivals. So I'm trying to think.
What about people stealing your material? That's all in the news now. Comedians are stealing from other comedians. Has that happened to you?
It's happened to every time I go to a town. Something stays there. Yeah, there's no way to fight it.
It's sad.
I know the guy you're talking about on the internet. I go, first of all, the jokes he stole, I didn't think were that funny. And you know, here's the thing. There's a thing now called Periscope, someone was telling me about, where kids just, it's like Rupert Pupkin. They just stand in the living room and talk into their phone.
A live streaming.
And it goes
things out
on a live stream and go, that's not real comedy. You realize that, right? Talking to your phone, you're not really a stand-up.
No, I know.
You know, but people come to the show and see him. I go, and you people are fools because there's no way this guy's got an hour of material that's interesting.
Right. Of course. Great to see you again.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I told you.
I know.
You do not disappoint, Kenny.
You
never do.
Man.
Go see Kenny Rogerson at Zany's in Town here in Chicago this week and then Zany's in Rosemont next week. You will not be disappointed. It's Zany's.com for all your information. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on 720 WGN. I'm going to give the phone number out now, if that's okay.
Please do.
Because we get a lot of calls when this guest is in the studio. Yep. 312-981-7200. His name is Dr. John Duffy. He's a highly sought-after clinical psychologist. He's an author and a really great book, number one best-selling book, The Available Parent, which I have not read cover to cover, but I'm telling you, Dr. Duffy, I read bits and pieces as needed, and you are pretty amazing.
Any way that it works for you, that's great.
So. You did a coloring book version for me, which is fantastic. I'm almost done.
I hope that's working for you.
Oh, boy, is it ever. I'm staying in the lines, John. We really appreciate it.
All right. So being a parent is not the easiest thing on earth. And I joke about it sometimes on the air, Bill,
sure.
when I say, you know, I'm the worst parent. I don't think I'm bad. I love my kids and I try really hard, but I feel like I mess up all the time. Is that a common feeling?
That is a very common feeling. And I hear it almost every day. And I usually encourage, seriously, I do. And I usually encourage parents back way off that feeling. Usually we're doing our best, right? And sometimes we're dealing with difficult circumstances. But if we're judging ourselves as we go, then we tend to make worse decisions, right? Because we're thinking, we're second guessing ourselves and we're thinking things through too much. Usually your instincts are pretty good as a parent, almost all the time.
Yeah.
So if you follow your instincts and fear isn't getting in the way and your judgment to your kid and yourself isn't getting in the way and your ego isn't getting in the way, chances are you're in your lane. You're where you need to be.
There were several times, John, I can't even tell you how many times, that I said to either one of my daughters, I've never done this before, and I'm going to get it right some of the time, but I'm going to get it wrong a lot of the time, too, so you got to bear with me and trust me. I'm trying to do everything for everybody's best benefit.
Right.
That's okay to show them that you're, I guess it's a weakness, but I wasn't embarrassed about the fact that this was all kind of new to me.
No, I love that, Bill, actually. You know, I think if we meta-communicate with our kids, if we talk to them about, like, what parenting is like for us, and, hey, sometimes I'm going to mess this up, and let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it also models for them, hey, you don't have to be perfect. In fact, I'm not perfect. And, you know, we'll work together to make it through what are pretty difficult times and pretty difficult years. But short of that, if you present as a parent who is perfect, you know, that gives kids this, like, unrealistically high bar to try to live up to. They feel like they really can't communicate honestly and fully with their parents.
Yeah.
And it creates this wholly unnecessary disconnect between parents and kids. So I like your method a lot better than that. And oh. and the modeling part is huge.
And you know, like when we were growing up, and Bill, I don't know how your parents were to you, but they could never admit fault, you know? And there are some people like, you shall respect my authority and I'm your parent. I'm not saying to be their friend, because anytime there's something in the news where a baby's crying in a restaurant and other people get involved, it's like, oh, you have to do your job and parent them. I'm not saying be their best friend, but it's fine to admit you don't know what's going on.
It is. And it's also, I think we've overcorrected on not being our kids' friends sometimes, because when our kids cross into adolescence, we're not even willing to be friendly with them. This is what I hear from kids all the time is like, well, suddenly I feel like my parents are my adversaries. Like, you know, I'm working against them instead of them working with me suddenly. And it's really discombobulating for kids. They really don't know how to respond to a parent who is suddenly coming at them with, you know, why aren't you doing your homework? And, you know, where have you been? And, you know, this fear.
Right.
And kids are thinking, well, 2 years ago, we were just having fun. So what happened all of a sudden?
You know? What about this? I always hear people, sometimes in your profession, sometimes not, say, don't bombard your kid with questions. However, in any conversation, there's a whole lot of questions. That's what a conversation is you say something, you ask a question, you say something, you ask another question. So how would you get around that without asking a bunch of questions?
There's so much we want to know from our kids, right? At a time when they stop talking openly, right?
Yeah.
And so what we're going to get is moments. Parents want hours. I worked with a mom recently who said, I'm really disappointed in myself. I wanted a family meeting for an hour every Sunday night, and I just can't get it with my teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you're never going to get that with your teenagers, you know? But if you get a moment, take the moment and take the conversation you get in the moment, and sometimes that'll stretch. Most of our kids regress sometime during the day and they act like they're younger. It might be bedtime. It might be first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Take advantage of those times and get them to talk. But if you have a lecture that you're weaving into that, your kid's going to be savvy enough to recognize, oh, I'm being lectured here. This isn't really a conversation. This is a one-way street. So my bias is save the lecture for other times. And when you feel like you're connecting with your kid, be curious. Ask really honest, open, curious questions. What's going on with you? What's going on with you when we fight? What's going on with you and your friends? What is your class like, you know?
When my daughters go somewhere, I don't ask them where they're going because I want to spy on them. I'm curious where they're going. You know, I kind of want to know where they're heading.
Well, and that's good news right off the bat. You don't want to spy on them. You just want to into their world, right?
Yeah.
I suspect you give off a vibe as a father that would suggest that you're really just curious, you know? That said, the adolescent years, a lot of kids don't want us to know everything about their lives. So they're going to hold back. And it's hard for parents to find that line between, okay, what's normal and when are they trying to pull one over on me? And they're, you know, they're going to be pushing the line in terms of safety in a way that I'm uncomfortable with. That's why those meta level communications are really important at other times, because, you know, then you just get anxiety when they're heading out for the night. And that's the worst thing we want for parents. That's the last thing we want.
You can also tell if you have a pretty good working relationship with your kid. Like, I will text my 16-year-old after school and say, where are you? And I get an answer. It's not, why do you want to know? It's like, I'm either at play practice at the radio station or at Stone Grove Guitar. And I just want to know where he is. And he answers me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When you were talking about talk to your kid, have a conversation, you know, if you have a lecture in mind, save it for another time, just have a conversation. We all know this because when we were kids, I hated when my mom would lecture me, or I hated when she accused me of things I didn't do. But how come I find myself doing that, even though I hated it as a kid?
It's this natural parental, you know, impulse, because our parents did it. It's how we were raised, right? And fear worked for us. You know, like we were afraid of our parents, a lot of us. Our kids aren't afraid of us, so our lectures aren't going to work. So I always prefer like kind of an open communication, because your kid, in all likelihood, almost guaranteed knows your lecture. There are times in sessions where I will stop a parent in the middle of a lecture and I'll tell a kid, you take over. Do it. I want to hear the lecture from your point of view. They never miss it. They know what their parents want to say. They know where their parents stand on virtually everything under the sun.
Yeah.
So you can spare them the lecture and just spend some time connecting with them. And texting is an underrated way of doing that, by the way.
John, you mentioned that layer of fear seems to have gone away from the last generation till this one. Why did it go away, and is it better, worse, or just different that it is gone?
It doesn't mean no respect, does it? Because people say, oh, kids don't respect their parents anymore. I think they do. They just don't fear them like we did.
I think that's exactly right. Starting with that, Wendy, I think our kids absolutely respect us unless we find ways to lose that respect. And some parents do that almost with unwittingly, without having any intention of doing that. But our kids do respect us on the whole. And fear has come along in part because when we were kids, that was our only communication with our parents. You know, our parenting wasn't really a verb a generation ago, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, like people weren't spending time like trying to connect with their kids and do some of the things that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
People didn't go to talks or read books like my book a generation ago. This wouldn't have worked out. Now we have this better way of connecting with our kids. And it's amazing because kids are actually, I think, smarter than we thought
they
would
be. We'll be back with more. Sorry, Joe.
And more connected than we thought they would be. And we can learn a lot from them about their world, about the technology that's evolved in their world, about the speed with which things move in their world. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot to learn from our kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny when my 13-year-old says something to me, like I'll say something, he'll go, why are you mad at me? I said, I'm not mad. And he says, what about that tone? And I said, the tone, I'm the one who's supposed to be saying to a 13-year-old, I don't like that tone. He says it to me. But he's right.
Right, right. Yeah, and listen, in fairness to us parents, I think we're entitled to a few non-negotiables in our house, right? A few things are not okay, right?
My house, my rules. At least a few rules.
Not a dozen, but
don't
three
play,
or four.
You can't play with Bill's toys.
Right. That should be a rule.
Absolutely a rule. Are you kidding me?
It should be a rule. Hold that thought. More with Dr. John Duffy in just a little bit. If you want to join in, you can at 312-981-7200. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We've had Dr. John Duffy on the show several times, and after having him on the show, I wanted my kids to see him, and they do, and I don't want to hog him, Bill, because I see Dr. John Duffy off the air.
Sure.
So let's have the listeners have some questions. Is that
Absolutely.
A good idea?
Absolutely. Yeah, 312-981-7200. We'll get that done.
Nanette.
Hi.
Hi, Nanette.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm enjoying this discussion. My question for Dr. Duffy is, my husband and I, we have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we discipline differently. Our 10-year-old, he's a boy, and he is a very good child, but sometimes he acts up, and my husband's more like quick to react. And
right.
I try and read all the books and you know, do a lot of research, and so I'm more calm and, you know, kind of direct with him. And he's conflicted, I think, as a child, because he's getting two different, you know, types of communication from us. So what do you recommend?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts here, Nanette. First of all, one thing you're teaching your 10-year-old is to be adaptable. And it sounds like you and your husband both love your son. And so he knows that he's coming from that place to start with, right? My parents love me. They just approach me in a different way. So nothing you're telling me suggests, ooh, it's really critical. Something has to change right away. But I think it might be useful for you and your husband to sit down at some point and talk about how it is that you want to raise your kids and what vibe you want to have in your house as you raise your kids. And and one thing I would encourage you to try is, if he is consistently kind of the disciplinary heavy and you're more the connector, I would take a week and I would switch and just see how that plays out in your house.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. Thank you. We'll give that a whirl.
All right. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, Nanette.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell me what that switch accomplishes. What does that do?
It tells your kids that they can connect with both of you.
Yeah.
And that at any given point in time, you're going to be parented by either one of your parents. So there's this flexibility and fluidity in the household that isn't normally there. And what Nanette is describing, this happens in a lot of houses. You know, oftentimes one parent's the heavy. It's more often the dad than the mom. And then the mom is more the connector. And when I push
or the apologist, as I'm called.
Oh. Yes, yes, yes. Oh. And when you push each other into the opposite positions, usually you don't completely assume the opposite position, so you tend to do more of both.
Sure.
So really that's meeting somewhere in the middle. You know
what
I mean?
Do you tell the kids you're switching, or do you do that covertly?
I think you can tell the kids, like, you know, hey, this is going to be something we're going to try out, something a little bit different this week, and we're going to see how it goes.
Interesting.
And kids like experiments like this. They like, they're playful, and
they
they're
like
willing
to try
something
new. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, and they like to know, hey, we're part of it. You know, we parents, we're not perfect. We're part of the issue. If something's not working perfectly in this house, we have to work on it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. This is a fantastic question. There are a lot of grandparents that take care of their grandkids. Either something has happened to the parents, or in a daycare situation, or after school with a parent working. And is this Schwartz?
Yes.
Hi, Schwartz. You have a question for Dr. John Duffy?
I do. I'm asking the rules of the road for someone who will become a formal mother-in-law in the next 2 years. And shortly thereafter, the plan is that I will become grand-mère in our family, which is grandmother.
Right.
And I would like the rules of the road for this century.
You know, it's funny that you asked this, Schwartz, because I think those rules are changing as we go here. And I encourage grandparents or soon-to-be grandparents and their child and child-in-law to sit down and talk about, oh, well, what role do you want us to play? Because we want to play an active role. I'm going on the assumption that you do. And, you know, and what role you're going to play as caretaker, as disciplinarian, as playmate, and kind of set that standard early on in the relationship. And kudos to you for kind of getting on this early in the game, because the earlier you establish that discussion, which is probably an ongoing discussion, not a one-time only discussion, the earlier you establish that, the better, and it's going to work, and the less tension there's going to be between you and the generation right behind you in terms of caretaking with the kids.
Okay, now let's add another caveat to that.
Okay.
I happen to be a single mom.
Okay.
And I don't think that the her father's wife will be involved. I think her father will be. So how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think more and more there are situations like yours in place. So I don't know that my advice really changes a whole lot. In fact, I think you might have a little more flexibility, a little more play, a little more time with the kids, and that might make things work even better. You know, parents are so busy these days, and when there is a grandparent who is willing to be involved and eager to be involved in caretaking with the kids, most of us parents, we're really, really happy to know that. So I think if you let the next generation know, hey, I'm available and I want to know my grandkids, regardless of what happens with the grandparents on the other side, I think that puts you in a good spot.
Okay, so being available is understandable. Is it realistic to say to one's offspring, well, I would be a grand-mère as I have been a mother and continue to be a mother? Does that work or no?
Do you mean in terms of like taking care and disciplining the kids and, you know, and that kind of thing, like kind of a co-parenting type thing?
Oh, with my daughter? Oh, God, that wouldn't be a good idea.
Okay, you're way ahead of me then.
I'm the police and the National Guard. I would take a secondary role, but is it fair to think that she would understand who I am? Because, you know, she's had 3 decades at this.
Yeah, but I think it's an important discussion to have because these roles can get really blurry and boundaries can get crossed and there can be ill will established. So I think the earlier you have the talk about what your role is, the better. And I have to tell you, Schwartz, it sounds like you know kind of where the boundaries need to be and ought to be. So I think you're starting from a really, really good place. But I would encourage the discussion because you seem like you're primed to have it soon.
Schwartz, we have to run, and I have to say may the Schwartz be with you because it's just fun to do.
Oh, that's fun.
You can pick up John Duffy's book, The Available Parent, and really there's so many helpful hints in there. You will definitely be amazed. Thank you so much for calling. The Available Parent, he's Dr. John Duffy. And let me just see if Peter can hang on. Hey, Peter.
Yeah, hi.
We would like to take your question, but we have to break for news. Can you hang on? It's a pretty important question, and I think Dr. Duffy would like to address that.
Oh, in person off the air?
No. We're going to do news. Can you hang on, and then we'll take your question on the air. Awesome. Something that's very important. We'll take a quick break, do some news, 312-981-7200. Dr. John Duffy, what's your website?
It is www.drjohnduffy.com, and I've got a free parenting series at parentbetternow.com.
All right, cool. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It is WGN. Thank you so much, Kim. And whether you have kids or not, you're going to someday. And it seems like there are always parenting issues that we need help with. I'm telling you, someone told me in radio, one of the people in sales when I was first pregnant, and I said, I don't know what to do. I never babysat. What do you do? And she said, you know what? Just love them. Do your best and just love them. Dr. John Duffy is with us today. Is that pretty accurate advice?
Boy, do I love that advice. I mean, you know, as we talk in between things, you know, in the end, what is parenting about? If you just love them, and that is the metric from which you address your kids, you can't really go too far off the rails, right? I mean, if that's your sole goal, I'm going to show my kid every day how much I love him or
right.
her. Man, you're winning. You're winning as a parent, no doubt.
Thank you, Ella, for giving me that wonderful advice. We have a caller who's been on hold through the news, and this is an important thing that we'd like you to address right now, Dr. Duffy. Peter, did you have a question for Dr. John Duffy?
Yes. My child, best friend, committed suicide. How do you prevent copycats, and how do you tell the signs? I mean, that something like that could happen, you know, because my child was grieving, and... you know, I'm just a regular guy. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's...
And you're scared, as a parent, you're scared and thinking about your son doing that. I can't blame you.
No.
Well, it's not my son, but it's my daughter.
Well, Peter, you know, first of all, I'm so sorry that your daughter is suffering that loss. It happens way, way, way too often among young people. So I'm hoping other people are listening as well who... have been in this circumstance. My bias with your daughter, what I think a lot of us do because suicide is such an uncomfortable topic is it becomes clandestine and we don't talk about it. So the first thing I encourage you to do is to talk to her about it and talk to her about it a lot and let her say even her darkest thoughts about it, you know, and let that line weigh out. Let her say whatever it is she needs to say. And she might have some things to say that are uncomfortable for you to hear, you know, that she has felt that way in the past. She knew her friend felt that way. You never know. I've dealt with this so many times. You never know what a kid's going to come up with. And if you feel like, boy, I just don't know if I have the tools it takes to help her through that. I don't want you to hesitate for a moment to get her in front of a mental health professional to talk that through. Because as parents, one of the most important things we can do is use all the tools at our disposal. And sometimes we carry this stigma about seeing people like me. But my strong bias would be if you feel like, she's a little withdrawn, a little regressive, and I really I don't want her sliding down any kind of depressive slope, definitely get her in to see somebody. But in the meantime, talk about it and talk about it openly and talk about it a lot. And I'll throw out one other thought. Oftentimes when kids commit suicide, we tend to focus so much on those last moments of that child's life. Allow her some time to celebrate the years before that time, because sometimes that helps kids through it, to kind of tell funny stories and to remember their friend in a way that isn't just tragic. Helps kids a lot to get kind of past the grief part. And,
go ahead, please. Doctor, you know, these kids are never forthcoming. I mean, they'll tell you only what they want to tell you. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And if you feel that way, if you feel like, boy, you know, I've really, really tried to get her to open up and she's really clammed up about this, then I would absolutely suggest getting her in front of a mental health professional. You might start with a school social worker, but somebody outpatient, a therapist in private practice can help her. The other thing you might suggest is a ritual. A lot of kids get into the idea of, like, you know, planting a tree or putting up a plaque or doing something in terms of volunteer work in the name of the child who committed suicide. And sometimes that gives them something to do with their grief instead of just, like, sitting with it and suffering with it. So,
and maybe it helps them to talk about it, too. Once they're, you know, if they plant a tree, oh, I did this in honor of my friend. Maybe that'll open up some lines of communication with you as well, Peter.
Yeah, that's a good, great idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, but to your point, Peter, I get your point. Like, it is so tough to get kids to open up about this stuff, in part because they don't know any better than we do how to talk about it. You know, it's such a tragic loss. It's so sudden and unexpected, and too often kids blame themselves, you know, via social media or something like that. Boy, I saw that last text, or I saw that last status update. I think I could have read something in there. There maybe is something I should have done. So it's really important to kind of console your child and let them know, no, this isn't your fault. This isn't your problem. It's just your loss, and we're going to help you get through the loss.
Hey, thank you so much.
Good
Absolutely,
luck to you, Peter.
Best of luck.
John, I think there has to be a way to diplomatically say to your kid, if you want to talk about it, I'm here. If you're not comfortable, I get it. Take your time, but if you do want to talk about it, I'm glad to talk about it.
And that is the diplomatic way to say it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, right. The worst thing you can do, I think, is to force your kid. Like, you know, we are going to talk about this right now.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason I push the word available. Let your kid know you're available. Sometimes they'll take you up on that, and sometimes they won't. But if they know you're there, that helps.
That makes a big difference.
It does.
Someone's texting, wants to know if you're taking new patients. His name is Dr. John Duffy. The website, drjohnduffy.com.
I'm always taking new patients. I'm a pretty busy guy, but feel free to reach out via the website. And if I'm not the guy to help, I'll help you find who will.
And again, the name of the book, The Available Parent. It's available. Where's the best place to get that?
Amazon.com.
The Available Book.
The Available Book, for sure.
All right. We have to take a break, and then we'll try and get to a couple more questions here, but I have to throw this out here. You had mentioned not being friends with your son or daughter, your children, but having a communicative relationship with them. And someone has taken issue with that, because with all these bad scenarios, suicide, heroin addiction, depression, this whole epidemic, the new parenting BS does not work. Stop bashing our parents' way of doing it. It was much more stable. So let's take a break. You digest that. And
absolutely.
We'll discuss it. He's Dr. John Duffy and Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. Do we go back to questions, or do we go back to that texter with Dr. John Duffy that was saying, you know, this whole new parenting phase is a bunch of BS. We got to go back to the days when we controlled our kids.
What do you think, John? Address that a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I have been accused many times of being kind of the soft parenting advocate, and I get the thought, because the old school ways really felt like they worked. What I'm suggesting isn't that we stop parenting. We're just buddies with our kids, right? I just think the old ways don't work in that our kids aren't afraid. So in order to gain the leverage we need to do the parenting we need to do, I'm saying let's have a lot of positive interactions with our kids. So in those times when we need to set a limit, lay down some discipline, have a consequence, clarify some rules, that we have the connection there to do it so that our kids are going to heed our words. So I understand the criticism, absolutely. But I think the strength in parenting has shifted in a generation, and I think it comes from connection more than it comes from fear.
Yeah.
All right, we may have time for one question here, and Barbara is on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm pretty well desperate here. I have an adult son that was diagnosed as bipolar with psychotic features this past July, and he is still saying that there's nothing wrong with him. So I've just about ran out of ideas to try to get him to face the fact that he needs help, and he's just totally refusing it. What can I do?
Right. Barbara, can I ask, first of all, I'm so sorry you're struggling with this. This is one of the most difficult things as a parent that any of us can deal with, right? A condition where we really cannot easily reason with our kids. How old is your son?
He's 27.
Has he been hospitalized in the past?
He was right off the bat for the mandatory 5 days.
Okay, right.
Then they released him, and but he just keeps saying, I'm not mentally ill. I don't need any help, and he does.
Right. Well, you know, there is a prevailing theory that a lot of my contemporaries would support that would say, you know what you need is tough love, put him out on the street, and kind of let whatever happens happen. I have a real tough time with that because I put myself in a parent's shoes and I think, you know, boy, I've got a 20-year-old son. I don't know if I could do that.
No, I can't.
So short of that, what you probably can do is leverage your position with him a little bit. I assume he lives under your roof or he's dependent upon you. So I would, at a time when he is more reasonable than not, really leverage that position and say, you know what, we're going to go in and we're going to see somebody. And that doesn't have to be kind of this immediate threat of an inpatient psychiatric hospitalization, but at the very least, a visit with a qualified therapist who's worked with bipolar disorder or with a psychiatrist who has, and at least get the ball rolling in terms of getting him the care he needs. And, you know, once you get him in front of somebody, I usually encourage parents, give me an hour or two and I'll take it from there. And most good clinicians are able to do that. So my bias would be, let's not make your job to be his therapist and his psychiatrist for the rest of his life. Let's make it your job just to get him in front of the right people in the short run. Is that fair?
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Helping me.
Good My luck, pleasure. Barbara. And even just to say, let's give it a try. Let's just, you know, promise me this one time. We can talk about it after that.
Right. Let's see how it goes. You may or may not like this person, and we'll regroup after that.
Quote, unquote, tough love. Never. Would you never see a time where that's the way to the best route? What do you think?
I think it's a very, very, very last resort. But I have to tell you, Bill, I rarely, if I can't remember a time in the last 5 years where I've run into a situation where I thought that's the right answer.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Well, our instincts are all against that.
Because
you go, we're dealing with somebody that we love. Why would we bring the tough into that?
Right. And the theory is sound. I like the theory. I just don't think most of us have it in us as parents to be able to kind of put our kid out on the street. The one trickiest part of it is addiction.
Yeah.
You know, kind of advanced addiction. Sometimes there are no options because you're dealing with somebody who's unreasonable and deteriorating and slowly killing themselves.
Right.
And refusing help.
Exactly. And refusing help. So in that circumstance, I can see where you have to exercise tough love.
This is the second time that Breaking Bad has been referenced on the show, but there, I don't know if you were a fan of the show or not, but there's a scene where one of the characters, Jesse, his parents obviously just cannot handle him anymore. And they won't let him in the house anymore. And that was in the whole run of the show. That was one of the hardest episodes because as a parent, you go, boy, that so goes against the grain of what you want to do. You want to pull him in and go, I love you. Don't screw your life up.
But wasn't he stealing from the family to get drugs? I mean, there are various times that
there's too much toxic behavior, right? So much toxic behavior. And when you have other kids and other family members, and everybody's being affected, at some point you do have to do something to protect everybody else.
Yeah.
And the same note that Barbara called in about her adult son, there's someone who is texting, and it would be kind of the same thing. 16-year-old who has anger issues and thinks nothing is up. How do you approach 16-year-old who seems to have social anxiety, then anger, when suggestions to get involved comes up? Same thing. At least try and get them in front of someone just to talk, and they may enjoy it.
Absolutely. And they probably will enjoy it. And the way to get them to talk to somebody is to say, hey, you know what? Let's try it one time. And I would vet that person. I would talk to that person and make sure their tone is casual enough and open enough that they are likely to connect with your 16-year-old.
And it's worth a try. I wouldn't give an ultimatum. Just, hey, try it once. Let's see how it goes.
Absolutely.
And then maybe you could go, let's try it twice and see how it goes.
Yep.
It wasn't so bad.
Exactly. Exactly. And if the therapist is doing their job on the other end, it wouldn't be so bad.
Thank you so much for coming by. Your book is amazing, The Available Parent. Really, I don't know who is the perfect parent, and we all could use some help. The book is great, some great tips, great advice. Dr. John Duffy, you can reach him at drjohnduffy.com, and you have some other parenting things going on, you said?
Yeah, I've got a free parenting video series. It's a 5-part series at a website called parentbetternow.com.
I'll have to watch it, and I'll let you know if it worked for me.
Awesome.
Try it one time, Wendy.
One time.
Just one time. If you like it, we'll take a look at having you back.
What is it, parent?
Parentsbetternow.com.
All right.
John, thanks very much for being here. Have a great rest of the week. That's Dr. John Duffy. We're going to take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our show. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Wendy Snyder. We've got 2 hours for you, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to join in, we would love to hear from you. Call us or text us.
Hillary Clinton. You know her?
I've heard of Hillary Clinton. Yeah, she's running for the presidency.
She is, and she broke the internet. Something she did broke the internet a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's done something else. So we've got some audio of Hillary Clinton, and I'm starting to feel bad for her.
You feel bad for her? Why?
Well, it all started a few days ago during a campaign speech in Reno, Nevada. Hillary Clinton was talking about the Republicans and wanted to say that they were very untrustworthy. And she mentioned a political ad. I'll quote her. This is Hillary talking. One of my favorite political ads of all time was a radio ad in rural Arkansas where the announcer said, "Wouldn't it be great if somebody running for office said something we could have an immediate reaction to, whether it was true or not? Well, we have trained this dog, the dog, if it is not true, he's going to bark."
Mm-hmm.
And then Hillary Clinton said this.
You know, I think we could cut right through a lot of there.
Wait, let's try it again.
You know?
Oh, we got to get it at the very beginning. She barked.
She barked a little bit. I heard that. Yeah.
Follow them around, and every time they say these things, like, oh, you know, the Great Recession was caused by too much regulation. You know?
Okay, so she barked, and it broke the internet, basically.
A lot of people wanted to see a potential president barking in public. You don't see that often.
And, of course, Trump came out and said, you know, had he done that, everybody would have made fun of him. Well.
Probably.
Yes. But everybody is making fun of Hillary.
Right.
And so then I saw some other audio of Hillary Clinton, and I've been listening to her, and it sounds like she has a cold, and she's, you know, on this campaign trail, and it is...
It's rigorous.
It's grueling.
Sure.
And she sounds a little nasally.
Yeah.
So she was up at a podium recently and had a little tickle in her throat.
Represent inmates. Excuse me.
People applauded for this.
Well, she was really having a difficult time.
Too much to say.
Too much
and
what?
Too much to say.
Oh.
And you get this dry hack.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about her.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Thank God people were chanting, because how do you get out of that? She had a sip of water.
That's been...
not ready to talk yet.
Wow, this went on.
Wow. Thank you, Hazel.
Who's Hazel?
I don't know who Hazel is.
All right.
She's up here. This is live.
That's been part of my mission.
You can hear the cold.
Oh, this is terrible. Nobody...
representing poor people.
She has now put a lozenge in her mouth.
Corporation.
Yeah.
And then she's still not
about
quite...
making people...
Listen to that.
lives better.
Oh, that's
guys,
that
I feel
terrible.
So bad
it
for her.
It taught me that even if you're young, you don't have a powerful job.
She or a good cough drop.
She can't rebound off this.
You stick with it. You can make a difference.
You guys, this is like a huge speech she's giving.
Sure.
And it's happened to me on the air. Kevin, it happened a while ago where it's like in the wintertime, it's a dry cough. So I went into the producer's booth to cough because I couldn't stop. And do you remember what happened? You're like, are you okay? I said, why? What's wrong? My nose started bleeding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin thought I had Ebola. You're hemorrhaging, he says.
What a sight that would have been for Hillary.
Well, imagine that. And I mean, there's nothing you can do. You feel that tickle coming on, and there is nothing you can do. And she's at a podium. She had a drink of water.
Right.
And it just wouldn't stop. And then it's not like you can say, okay, thank you, and walk away. She had
an
agenda.
More speech. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she popped a lozenge, and I felt terrible for her.
The crowd at some point first applauded when she was coughing and choking. There was some applause. And then they went, well, that's not going to help her. We better chant her name.
Well, I think someone got, the wherewithal to go, this is not good. She's not going to be able to continue. Let's make some noise, create a diversion.
Right. That's the best thing to do in politics is to create a diversion.
But I felt,
I'm with them.
I mean, what do you do? There's nothing you can do.
There is nothing you can do. But nobody offered to Heimlich her.
Well,
although
she wasn't choking.
I guess she wasn't choking. She was coughing.
She didn't do the universal sign of choking where you put your hand up or your neck going,
Remember when you were a kid and you would go through a coughing jag? Sorry about my language. When you would go through a coughing jag, and every mom is instructed to tell their kids to do the same thing, and that is to lift your arms up.
Raise your hands.
I maintain that unless you're being robbed at the same point at gunpoint, there's nothing, you will not be benefited at all, I don't think, from raising your hands. You'll just keep coughing, and your hands will be up in the air.
That's when you're choking. And not, listen, if you can make a noise, you're breathing. I mean,
right.
if you're not making any
then
noise, there's a problem. So if a kid, if it goes down the wrong pipe, or they swallow a Tootsie Roll before chewing it all the way through, I could see where raising your arms makes your esophagus more vertical, and perhaps it'll push it down.
My mom, though, like my brother and I, if we would cough one time, she would just yell, would you put your arms up? And then we would put our arms up
we
and then
always
cough
listen.
For 8 more minutes. We go, this is stupid. This isn't anything. I'm just standing more upright, but I'm still coughing.
Well, you know what? Just having Dr. John Duffy in earlier, parents do the dumbest things that they think is going to work.
I think that probably went back 150 years because my mom would just say it automatically, like one cough, and she's like, you're going to keep coughing if you don't put your arms up. And then it didn't help.
God,
ridiculous.
You bring back such a memory because that's true. That's what
moms
did.
Put your arms up.
I wonder if I've done that.
You have to. You're a mom. You're required.
Can we hear that again? Just I really feel bad. I feel bad that she could not control it in a very important moment.
All right, yeah.
Hillary Clinton.
I represent inmates. Excuse me.
Yay. She's talking.
She coughs well.
She's a good cougher.
Presidential cough. Too much to say.
She said too much sex. That's what I thought. Who's that? Was that Bernie Sanders? Is he trying to out cough her? What? That doesn't.
It got
what?
Worse.
That didn't. Oh,
oh
no.
That one was bad.
Oh, that's been.
You ready? Try it again.
Yay.
Whoa.
Thank you, Hazel.
Oh, well, I won't have time to fix Epsom salts for you today. Too much going on around here.
Wait, was that Hazel from TV?
Yes, Mr. B.
What was she doing at the Hillary Clinton rally?
She was bringing her more water.
She's a big Rubio supporter, though. That was weird. She'd be there.
I just wanted to play this because I thought it was... It's terrible.
It's terrible.
I really feel bad for her. Does she get a mulligan?
She deserves one. That's terrible. You don't want, you're giving an important speech. You don't want to be taken like that. That's awful.
I just feel bad
She'll
for Hillary.
She'll be okay. She'll be all right.
I hope so. I hope this doesn't cost her the election. Wasn't right. that pretty of a cough either.
The coughing incident of February. That's what they'll always look back on that. All right. We'll take a quick break. We have more show for you. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. And it's WGN. Steve, thanks. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy.
And...
Well, Frank Fontana's here, too.
Listen,
I was saving that for the big reveal.
Frank, I was listening to your show on Sunday. A lovely job,
you
as
were?
Usual.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
And you were talking about on Valentine's Day, if you don't have a significant other, what else you can do. And it
right.
should be, you know, love is not just for, you know, romantic love, but love of family and friends and other people.
Sure, a big love fest. Mm-hmm.
And the reason we didn't introduce you is, even though we know you and we listen to you, I wanted to find your title.
Hmm.
And so TV and radio host, author, design expert, are we right. leaving anything out?
I mean, there's
we
a
are.
Few.
What were you, a former breakdancer, too?
I was,
You
actually.
Were a breakdancer?
Yes. Yeah.
Co-star of the Disney series, Hannah Fontana, which I used to watch with my
yes,
daughters all the time.
Right.
You were great on that.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a little-known fact. I was actually in a Disney show.
Were you? What show?
What?
Remember That's So Raven?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I had a cameo in the credits, the opening credits for that show. I don't know how good your memory is there, Bill, but... If you remember the opening, it was a whole bunch of people dancing in alleys.
I do remember.
And stuff. I was a guy dancing in the alley.
Really?
Do you know who yep. is a closet Raven, That's So Raven lover?
Who?
My husband, Jimmy Mack. Like, sometimes
You're
I'll
kidding.
Walk into his Star Wars room and think he's watching one of the Star Wars movies.
Yes.
He's watching That's So Raven. So I bet he's very familiar with you.
If you could slow-mo the intro.
So that means every episode.
Every episode
yeah.
for perpetuity of the entire you know, creation of this show, I am part of that.
That's fantastic.
Is that residuals?
No. I think I was an extra that day. I think I got paid $100. This was like way back, first days moving to L.A.
Yeah.
You know, they thought it was the most amazing thing to be on a big Hollywood lot. And,
yeah.
You know, just like, just for the experience. And then here I am, you know, 100 years later,
that,
part of history.
That's So Raven.
Is Raven.
That's so Raven.
It is.
Is Raven. She's on The View now,
yeah,
right?
She's on The
Can't
View.
Can't she get you on The View to talk design?
You know, that's a good point. I should reach out to her.
Sure.
Hey, it's me, the guy in that 3 seconds in your
oh,
intro.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. That,
yeah.
I would.
It's a little known fact. It's the first time I've ever revealed that here on
That's
on
so
your
impressive,
show.
Frank. Yeah, that's excellent. That's yeah. great.
Yep. I'm still impressed with the former breakdancer.
That's good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I did that, too.
That's good, too.
You remember the band KLF?
Yes.
No.
Yes?
Yeah.
You don't remember KLF?
KLF.
If you
heard,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What did it stand for? Can we say it on the air? Or?
KLF is going to rock ya. You. Know, you know, come on. Every song had that KLF hook in it
mm-hmm.
for years.
Anyway, this is a foreign language to me.
Yeah, I went on a small little... I did a lot of things in my teens. This was crazy.
But now you're on with us.
I'm on with you. Here I am.
And what are we talking about today? Because I love doing design things at home. I love trying to do things myself.
Right.
I'm usually successful.
Yeah. Bill, how about you?
Just the opposite.
Yeah.
Can't stand doing anything at home, and I'm awful at everything I try.
That's good.
Yep.
At least you know your limitations.
There are plenty of them, Frank.
So,
trust me.
You know, I'm glad Bill likes it, and well, he doesn't really like it, but the idea today is to talk about the DIY don'ts.
Oh, this
right?
will help me a lot, I believe.
This is a list of things you shouldn't do if you're attempting DIY projects.
Right. Like attempt DIY projects for some
right.
of us.
Start with that. Start
right.
by doing nothing.
Right.
But that's good. If you know that you're not, like my husband has absolutely no interest. If
yeah.
something's broken, hey, Wendt, who do I call?
Mm-hmm.
I like to try and fix it first, and then if it doesn't work, you can always call someone. So good for you that you don't even want to attempt it.
I don't
though.
Want to try.
And I've seen a lot in my career, you know, being a television on HGTV's Design a Dime and a slew of other.
That's
you know,
So Raven. Mention
yeah, That's So Raven. I can start dropping that one now. Now
I
that
would
it's
throw
public,
that in. Throw
I
that in.
I'll lead with that, actually. I've seen the craziest stuff, you know, that people will do. And rather than call somebody like a plumber,
mm-hmm.
you know, they might do things like use duct tape. This one website I found here, this one, I don't know what they were trying to do here, but they taped a doorknob
They used an electrical cord and a milk jug to stop a leak.
And it did it work? It didn't work, did it?
Temporarily, I'm
sure it did.
Interesting
combination. I would imagine at some level it did. But, you know, you see crazy things. And then how about this? I don't know if you ever installed a toilet. Have you ever installed a toilet?
No.
I changed a wax ring on a toilet, which technically is installing a toilet.
And technically gross.
It is disgusting what you see under there.
Gosh. You ever do one of those?
No. I don't know what that is.
So on the bottom of the, when you smoosh down your toilet, you pick up that heavy toilet and between the actual drain and the toilet base, you have to put like a wax ring in there so it makes it a seal tight, you know, and then you screw it down.
So there's no gaps. It kind of like makes it really.
Like a putty almost. Fills in the holes and then it makes it waterproof, but it also ends up over years, I mean, especially old houses like ours, they just accumulate crud. Like you would puke, Bill, if you actually saw what comes out of this thing.
Yeah, I bet.
So anyway, in a newer home or a remodel, you know, making sure the measurements are properly done, the positioning of a toilet's really important. Mm-hmm. One thing that people tend to forget to do is actually open the door to the bathroom inwards to get their clearance radius.
Oh.
If you have a tight space.
Right.
So I found this just bizarre, but on some occasions, you can Google this, people have fully installed the toilet, and then after the fact realized that the door is hitting the toilet.
Well, then what do you do?
Well, you don't do the plumbing thing. You actually, on this occasion, we will post these on your Facebook page,
please,
by the way.
Please do, because
these are hilarious.
Idiots.
People, and I love people, but some people shouldn't pick up a hammer or saw. They, in this situation, cut the door around the rim of the toilet. So when you open the door, now you have a cutout of, it looks like somebody took a bite out of your door where it clears the toilet.
Oh.
Versus moving the toilet.
So a little half circle that when the door opens, it'll give
perfectly
clearance.
Clears
to
that. Oh. And if you're really good at DIY, you can actually etch it perfectly around the toilet so it looks really nice as you're opening the door.
Except when the door is then in the closed position, there's this little bite taken out of it and you don't have any privacy.
Agreed. That's why you should measure first.
Especially if you have little kids, they'll crawl up and peek through that little hole.
Right.
And I got to imagine somebody's, I mean, who does this stuff? I mean, really. And then, so we look through the list here, and there's about seven of these. And the faucet, okay? It's not that big of a... Do you ever change a faucet on
the
sink?
No.
Yes.
You have.
God, Bill.
What do you do, Bill? Do you call people?
Yeah, I know where all the numbers are located, and we call a guy, and we go, fix this now, please.
I mean, it's usually just a washer, you know, a couple of bolts and nuts, and you just undo it. Make sure you turn the water off first.
Yeah.
Well, in this particular occasion, this person was fixing a dishwasher sink, didn't want to go buy a faucet, so they went out to their backyard, took a hose, cut the hose about a foot, rigged some mechanism. They were ingenious in how they actually rigged it to the base of the faucet and are using this flexible garden hose as a sink faucet.
Which is very popular these days. You get a faucet that you can take down and it sprays.
In theory, I think
pot filler.
Yeah, I think it works.
It looks terrible
on some level. One of the most miraculous things, and I don't know if we should save this for after the break or whatnot, because I'd actually, if you're open to it, I'd love to hear some of your listeners' worst DIY stories. Because I love when we do this on our show, we throw it out there.
Oh, that's perfect.
It takes people confident enough to admit this, you know, that they actually see. Bill's just straight up front, and he's like, I don't do it.
I can't even try it, because my fear, and I guess this is everybody's fear, is whatever's bad now, I'm going to make worse by fixing it. I don't want to do that.
Tim the Toolman Taylor, like Home Improvement style.
It's science fiction to me.
Science fiction, yeah.
Really? Because Pamela Anderson was on there.
I know.
When she looked like a woman.
Like the hottest.
More human-like, yeah.
I will admit to a mistake, a little thing I had to rig up to accommodate something. Can we take a break? And listeners, feel free to fess up 312-981-7200. I will admit to one.
All right. That's coming next. That's
I will, too. Wait, since
you got one as well?
I'm going to do it, yeah.
What are yours? What did you try to fix that went horribly wrong? 312-981-7200. Call us, text us. More in a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Frank Fontana has good hands, doesn't he?
He sure does.
Especially when I use lotion.
is that your secret, Frank?
That is my
secret. Lotion?
Yes, all right. Coconut oil.
Thanks for divulging. Yeah. We're talking about DIY don'ts, things right. You don't want to do because they can go horribly wrong, and a lot of people are checking in at 312-981-7200.
All right. Tim is on the line. Tim, what do you have for us?
Oh, okay. I pulled my first toilet after I got my first house. So I pulled the old toilet. My wife walks by. She says, I can smell that sewer gas. So I shoved some rags in the hole, right? So I had to go out and buy a new hose connect, came back, put the wax rings on, put the new toilet on, hooked it up to the water, and guess what?
You forgot the rags.
I forgot the rags.
Oh, my God. And that's such a production to get that toilet back on the ring and on the floor.
But let me ask you, Tim, was it after you flushed a couple times and it came shooting back at you?
I flushed it once, and that was enough water on the floor.
Oh, my God.
Then I had to go back buy new wax rings. That was the hard part.
Yeah, because you can only use them once. You make a mistake, you need a new one. Tim, that's a great one. Thank you.
But if you like a fountain effect or a,
or a bidet,
a bidet is so expensive, not this way. It makes sense almost.
Is this funny. Nick? Hi, Nick.
Hey, Wendy, Bill, how you doing?
Hey, Frank,
Nick.
What'd you do?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Listen to you since Q101.
Oh, you're very
Welcome
kind,
back.
Nick. Thanks.
Yeah, I miss you on that show. And, Wendy, I actually interned for you with Buzz. I'm the guy with sunglasses and Hawaiian shirts.
Oh, yeah,
that guy.
Manuel Noriega?
Yes, it was. Nick did a great job with that. Thank you. What did
That's
you
right.
do?
I loved it.
With a DIY well, don't.
I'm not a good handyman at all, and I'm embarrassed to say this to you, but I actually was fixing some shingles, and I put a hole in my roof, and my room flooded
awesome.
After it rained.
Why are you up doing shingles? That seems like almost an impossible job for someone to DIY.
Because I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Bill's got some validity here. I mean, not idiot-wise. I mean, you got
If you
some,
know you can't do it, stay away.
There should be a Bill category and a Wendy category.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a man. I can do anything.
So what'd you do? You pounded through the roof and made a hole in it as you were replacing the shingles?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. At least he's man enough to admit it.
Well, thank you, Nick. I appreciate you admitting that. Nice to talk to you again.
You guys need to come clean. What did you do that went horribly wrong?
It's not even horribly wrong, but when we bought our house, we had a kitchen that was rehabbed, I think, in the 80s, and it was just stock cabinets, not very pretty, and no hardware on them. So at some point, I said, you know what? I'm going to get some wrought iron knobs and like a cup drawer holder. Yeah. That'll look really good. So I decided which ones to get. I purchased them, really changed the whole look of the kitchen. However, there is one drawer that is a fake drawer. It's just it doesn't open. It's just looks like a drawer with the face plate on it.
Right.
And when I put the drawer or the knob on, the oven door wouldn't open. It blocked the oven door because it was a really tight fit.
Yeah.
So if you come to our house, and I will gladly show you this, it's a cup holder, wrought iron, and there's a screw on just one side. And when we open the oven, we just kind of slide the knob up so we can open the oven door.
That's fabulous.
And we have to take the screw off cabinet knob off too and put it in that
That's
drawer
just
right
brilliant.
There.
I mean,
but
really.
What could I do at that point?
Nothing.
What are you going to do?
You're stuck.
I mean, but I love the fact that you would take the time to like unscrew the knob when you, every time. How often you're opening your oven all the time? I'm sure, right?
Yeah, the knob usually stays off, and if you look at the cup holder, it's kind of in a vertical position instead of horizontal. But
brilliant.
What can I do?
The things we do for vanity.
And it looks so much better with the wrought iron knobs on it.
Of course.
Yeah, I agree. I have a knob confession as well. Those damn knobs. So I had, I do thousands of kitchens and stuff. And then one of my smaller renovations for a flip property I had, I couldn't get these knobs that I bought to stay put. So, you have to put a screw in through the back and usually screw them on tight. And for whatever reason, I used washers. It just would not stay. It was like the mystery.
Were they stripped inside?
No, it just would not catch. For whatever reason, it just would not catch tight enough. Maybe it was the distance between the screw and the knob and the wood and everything. But it felt like it was perfect. It looked perfect. And I've done it a million times. So I figured, I'll just put a little crazy glue behind the knob. Because crazy glue works for everything.
Sure.
I keep two bottles in my house.
I use Elmer's glue for that.
Oh, crazy glue blows it away.
Yeah.
So, long story short, I put glue on every single knob because I was so frustrated. I didn't have the time. I said, it's a for sale property. No one's ever going to know. Before I can even get the property up for sale, my kids are like in and out of the cabin and stuff. Every bit of crazy glue pulled off, spun the knobs, pulled the paint off the things, and it was a very expensive, stupid mistake on my part.
That's why I use Elmer's glue.
Because you can get it off, right?
Because you can.
Did you ever get your finger stuck with crazy glue?
Yeah.
It takes a while. It takes a good long while before you can get that out.
I did it the other day.
Sharp razor blade.
You know what I did right away? I had some citrus, like that manly
oil?
That oil stuff.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You know, like the industrial strength.
Sure.
It's like got sand in it. So I did that. But real quick, I was fixing blinds in my house. I had a piece of string fell off a blind. I'm like, a little dab of crazy glue. And just fixed that right up. I squeezed the bottle. The whole thing popped open on my fingers. My four fingers got stuck together. It was awesome.
We need a crazy glue intervention for Frank Fontana.
Totally. I need
Remember the commercials? The guy, the construction worker, would
That's
put his helmet to the wood beam and just hang.
But that was intense. Intentional, you guys.
It was intentional. Right.
All right. We'll do one more here. Fred, we don't have a lot of time, so what do you like to confess for your DIY don't?
Well, my brother-in-law and I decided we were going to place a couple of doors on our summer home in Wisconsin, and we did the one door. It took us all weekend, and then we decided this is on Memorial Day, so we left the other door outside and came back on the 4th of July to put it in, and obviously it had warped, but we put it in anyway. And once it was in, it wouldn't open. We had turned the door into a wall. And,
that's awesome.
Had to have a carpenter come and fix the whole thing.
That's great. I love that you can confess that. That's fantastic. I don't mean to laugh at you.
Thank you,
I mean,
Fred.
It's just great.
Sure.
I mean, people are all human. You know, I'm a guy who was on television doing this for a living, telling people what to do and do it right.
Right.
And I'm proud to say that sometimes I screw up.
It's impossible. You know? You can't be right all the time.
It can't be.
I have one more quick one.
Yeah.
Our bathroom door in our bedroom, there's a loft, our bedroom, which still isn't closed off.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the loft kind of settled. So the floor is a little uneven where the beams are. So the tile in the bathroom kind of bunched up and the bathroom door wouldn't close all the way. So I took it off the hinges. I had my neighbor Jack, who helps us with everything, he had a saw and he sawed 2 inches off the bottom of the door,
right.
Put it back on the hinges, closes, works perfectly.
Unreal.
But that's what you have to do. Instead of having someone come to retile everything, it's...
If you
shave a little off the bottom.
My house is... Wendy and I live in the same neighborhood, old homes. Every single one of my doors is shaved on an angle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My moldings are all crooked.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in my house is level. Ever. You could roll a ball from one... You could drop
totally.
A ball and watch it go across the entire house. And we usually have like a race with my kids' toys. But I mean, you live with it. I guess you learn to love it. But man, it's sometimes
frustrating.
I want a new house.
Yeah, of course. All right, it's Frank Fontana. Yeah, the same Frank Fontana from That's So Raven. You can hear him here on weekends.
Sunday mornings?
Yeah.
At what time is it?
It's Sundays from 1 to 3.
1 to 3.
Every Sunday. Actually, I'm glad you said it. I'm going to be off for a couple of weeks. We have some Northwestern programming coming on that's going to kind of trump us a little bit. I'll be in New York this week doing a huge event for World Kitchen. I'm hosting this big shindig up, and we took over Brownstone in Manhattan,
right,
in New York, and we're featuring all this brand new product from World Kitchen.
Speaking of sports, 2 weeks ago, because that was my week to listen to you, Wendy and I switch off. It was her week this week. I listened 2 weeks ago. It was during the Super Bowl, and I enjoyed the fact that you had no idea if the Super Bowl was going on at the time or later on in the day.
I was asking scores at like 2 o'clock.
Right, I heard that.
Mark Carmen's like, who
I know.
Are you?
You made Mark Carmen upset. You made him cry.
I did. He was a little upset. Yeah. He told me off air, I can't believe it. He wanted me to hand in my man card, but my goal that day was to do nothing with the Super Bowl.
You did. You pulled it off.
I thought it was endearing.
Nicely done, Frank.
What's your website?
It's frankfontana.net. And before I go real quick, the last DIY project, you guys got to post this on Facebook, was upholstering your refrigerator.
Yes.
Never,
why?
Never do it.
Who would do that?
I don't know, but somebody did. I got a picture of it. It's actually real.
It looks crazy.
Yeah.
I saw the picture. It looks so sad.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, guys.
News is next, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy, and you too. I don't want to leave anyone out. 312-981-7200. You can join in anytime you want.
This isn't you two. Duran Duran.
No, this is Duran Duran. From time to time.
Duran Duran?
Duran Duran. Duran Duran. From time to time, there will be a story, and I've talked about this so many times over the years. You've been here for most of it. A strange story will happen somewhere in the United States, and for some reason, that somewhere tends to be Florida.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. As I've mentioned many times, there's a website, FARC, and they kind of
collect these stories.
Yeah, the guy who runs FARC was on with us, and they have a special section of just Florida, and most of the stories on that website emanate from Florida. I don't know why. That said, a South Florida teenager is in jail after he played doctor with real patients for the second time in just over a year. Malachi Love Robinson.
Okay, there's your warning. Love is his middle name.
It's Malachi and then Love - Robinson.
So a hyphenated name.
It's a hyphenated, yeah.
So Love was his mother's name and...
Probably.
What's the father's
name? Robinson.
Cuckoo Cachoo.
It's not that Robinson. Oh. Malachi Love Robinson, whose name, even on its worst day, is cooler than mine on its best, is known to many as Dr. Robinson. That's what his patients referred to Malachi Love Robinson as, Dr. Robinson.
Teenagers? Really smart?
18
like
years old.
Doogie Howser-ish?
No. Well, he was smart enough to fool people into believing he was a doctor. He was arrested after he allegedly gave physical exams and medical advice to people, including an undercover officer.
You can't do it to a cop.
No, I mean, you're not supposed to do it to anybody, but you can't do it to an undercover police officer.
What kind of doctor?
He was arrested at a holistic medical clinic, one that he founded himself at 18 in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Did the undercover cop get better?
Wait a minute.
That's the best question of all. I mean, if he got better, stop complaining.
Right, leave me alone.
So he founded this medical center at 18?
My guess is somehow he went in with enough money to rent a facility.
And just put a sign up? Is that all you have to do?
You got to put a sign up. If you put a sign up, people come by.
I wonder if my new acupuncturist is legit.
I would look into this. Sources say that Love Robinson is the same teen that was caught in January of 2015 masquerading as a doctor at St. Mary's Medical Center. I remember this story. He was peeking in on gynecology exams and keeping a wardrobe of lab coats in his car. So he would come in when, you know, obviously.
I get it.
And, yeah.
Take a peeky poo.
Yeah.
Is that really every guy's dream? Because, you know,
no.
I'm sure a gynecologist can call up right now and say, it's work.
I bet you get tired of it at some point. A couple of decades in, you probably go, enough of this. I want to do something else. But those first 24 or 5 years, it's not a bad job.
All right, evidently that Doctor... is every boy's dream.
No, it's, you know what? I've told you this before. On Channel 11, when I was in, I'll just tell you the quick version of this. When I was in grade school, Channel 11 said, we're going to show you the birth of a baby right here on TV. And six of my friends and I all stayed home from school that day so we could watch it.
Feigning illness so you could watch it.
And then we got sick. We really got sick. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Your little kid eyes weren't ready to see that yet.
Still not. When I was in the room when Terry had the girls, and I kept saying all during the birth, this is only a movie. This is only a movie. Like the whole time. I was watching it. I'm like, this can't happen. Look at this. Kids are just coming out of there left and right. That's not right.
Good to know you're a great coach for her.
Dr. Sebastian Kent, who sounds like a superhero, but
yes.
He's not. He is an OBGYN whose office is at the St. Mary's Medical Center, said he was amazed to hear that the same teen who had introduced himself as a doctor a year ago had been accused of impersonating a doctor a second time. Now, I know you can't see me because it's radio, but trust me when I tell you this, I've seen pictures of this kid. He looks like an 18-year-old kid. He doesn't look like a doctor. He looks like an 18-year-old kid with a lab coat on.
If you see doctors and interns lately, sometimes, you know, we're not as young as we used to be. Sometimes they look pretty young.
But
not 18.
Not 18. That's...
But how did, first of all, wasn't he arrested before for doing
this?
Okay, so how did he get out to do it? I mean, I know they're not going to lock him up, give him a life sentence
right.
for that.
Right, for pretending he's a gynecologist.
Right, that's no death penalty there. but how does he get out and do this again?
That's the amazing part. You would think, once he has a rep like that, they wouldn't let him anywhere near something like this. But
and now he should be in way worse trouble.
He is going to be. This, again, the voice of Dr. Sebastian Kent. I have been in practice for 36 years. This is the first time something like this has happened that he knows of. It is very strange. Very, very strange. Love Robinson is charged with practicing medicine without a license, although the word is practicing.
Shut up.
He hasn't perfected it.
Why aren't you a defense
he's
attorney?
Practicing. I'm looking into that.
And this is a holistic thing he's doing now, right. So there is really probably no medicine.
I don't think they'd like to think of it that way.
Right. They would probably debate that assumption a little bit. They still have to be board certified in some way, don't they?
This is from the woman who's been cupped all week.
Listen, I don't really know what the thing is. I mean,
you still have to pass some sort of an exam.
How do you know?
You're right. It's not like long medical schools.
Yeah, I mean,
you're right. It's just funny.
I mean, my doctor is a doctor who does the acupuncture and the.
How do you know that?
Because I saw her
piece of paper.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a copy machine up here. I could make one.
Yep.
But that's what I mean. This is stuff that, you know, it really could fall by the wayside.
It could. It definitely could. He, Malachi Love Robinson, is being held at the Palm County Jail on $6,000 bail. If this kid had enough money to set up his own practice in a strip mall, he's got $6,000 on him.
You're right.
According to the Florida Department of Health, Love Robinson came onto the agency's radar after receiving a tip in October that he had been practicing medicine without a license. A photo, the date is not known, provided by the Palm County Sheriff's Department, and it's got to be recent. Because you see him, he looks like it's his high school graduation picture, except that he's wearing a lab coat. That's the only difference. He's not wearing a robe like you'd wear to graduation. He's got a lab coat on, and he's got the look of a guy going, I'm pretending to be a doctor, and I'm getting away with it. That's what you see when you see this kid's picture. Love Robinson has been arrested after the authorities said that he was posing as a doctor at an illegal medicine office that he ran. The Palm Beach Sheriff's Office says in a news release that the 18-year-old Malachi Robinson was arrested just this past Tuesday and charged for practicing without a license. Oh, one more quick thing. Authorities sent a cease and desist letter, this according to department spokesperson Brad Dalton, but Love Robinson continued to practice despite that. He opened the New Birth, New Life Holistic and Alternative Medical Center. Wow. I think that's why nobody questioned him. You see a name like that, you go, that's got to be real. It took me half the day to say the name of the place. He wouldn't mess around. He didn't just call it Malachi's House of Exams.
Yeah, that would be a good tip-off. You're right. I want to know what he did, like what services. Does he do cupping?
Certain things.
I really want to know what he did and how long was he in operation before a tip led to his arrest?
It doesn't say.
And
that's
let's
a
get
great
his
question.
Patience and say, you know,
how did you not know? Would you know, like, let's say you wanted to pull this scam off. I would have no idea. Say you opened up a place and you said it's holistic medicine, come on in. Once I introduced myself as a doctor, I'd be lost. I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, first thing, you'd have to take your baseball cap off.
No, I wouldn't do it.
So then that would be the telltale sign.
Howie Mandel was a doctor on St. Elsewhere. He always wore a baseball cap.
Not always. Not with the glove on.
Wayne Fiskus always did. Boston Red Sox hat.
I don't know. I just would like to know what things he performed, if he did it well.
I mean,
if there's any way we could talk to a former patient of his to find out, you know... How'd he do? Did your stress level go down?
I know. Maybe he was great at it. Still, though, how disconcerting is that? People went to him.
You know what, though? When you go to a doctor's office,
yeah,
you become so vulnerable. You really do. I'm telling you, I've gone twice to this acupuncturist, and I'm going to go back a bunch of times. I love her, but, you know, she could say, here, go do this, and I'd go, okay, because you think
you're just
in a very vulnerable spot at that point.
No, I get that. I understand that, but so does that mean we're just too trusting as a society?
Yes. Ask for credentials.
Well, every doctor's office I've ever been at, their diploma and other medical certificates.
Bertrand just said it. He's got a printer.
They're all, I guess. But some of them are laminated. They're so official. I'm not that gullible, am I? All right, we'll take a quick break. It's us, Bill and Wendy, two people pretending we're radio hosts. Call us, 312-981-7200. This is WGN.
All right, why do you want to put a picture of Dr.
Malachi Love Robinson?
Yeah.
All right, I want Kevin to post a picture of the doctor on our website. Not the good doctor, the pretend doctor. On Facebook, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook, because you and I are having a slight disagreement. There are a bunch of pictures of him on the internet, his doctor pictures, and we're disagreeing because you see this and you say, yeah, I could see where people would fall for this. You go into an office, you see a guy like this dressed up. You know, he's got a stethoscope. I don't have a stethoscope. You don't have a stethoscope. He must be a doctor. But when I see pictures of this guy, it looks like a high school kid pretending to be a doctor. He's like dressed up for Halloween as a doctor.
He's got a nice suit on. So I didn't see the lab coat. And again, he looks a little like Gary Coleman, but I hope
he does
taller.
Look a lot like Gary Coleman.
And he's got facial hair. I mean, you know.
I like the picture. There's pictures of him with his staff.
That he's looks like it's from a video.
Doesn't it? It looks like.
All right, that picture. Is that the picture you're putting up on our Facebook page? Because that one looks like he's in a fake doctor video, and he's got kind of like Robert Palmer's girls dancing in the background.
Right,
it looks very fakey. Bill, how can you tell someone's age? I guess he looks young.
In every one of these pictures, if I walked into a doctor's office for anything, big or small, if I had a paper cut and I had to go see a doctor and I saw this guy, I'd go, Is your mom and dad home? Because I need a doctor to fix this for me. You can't obviously help me. You're a small child.
So what would you do? Leave?
Yeah.
Just from looking at it?
Yeah.
You're smarter than, 100% of the people listening.
I know that some people look younger than they actually are, but this could not. There's no way in the world anybody could see this kid and assume he was a doctor. He doesn't even look 18. He is 18. He looks 16 to me. You would trust this guy? You'd walk into an office?
No, but you don't know. You don't know where Listen, I don't know. I check to make sure they're covered in my plan, and then I walk in. Now, what about insurance?
His plan is a meal plan. He's got like a ham and cheese meal plan. That's his only plan. And then to go watch cartoons as soon as the doctor's day is over.
I would be skeptical, but I would never. I don't think I'd walk out. I would go, Why do you laugh? People are, if they're going to a doctor for a specific reason, obviously something's wrong.
Right.
So they go in there, and again, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You see this guy who looks like a young doctor, very young.
Yes.
And he, hi, my name is Dr. Malachi Love Robinson.
Yes.
What seems to be your problem? I mean, it sounds like you're saying you'd laugh in his face and walk out.
If you ask me that same, I'm Dr. Malachi Love Robinson, what seems to be your problem? I'd go, the fact that you're a high school kid pretending to be a doctor. There's no way I would believe it.
Sure, you know that now. Hindsight is far greater.
Here's the picture. And again, we're going to post this on our Facebook page. He's posing for his doctor picture, but he's doing that same pose that high school girls do, where they're holding their hand, they're cradling their chin gently in their hand at a weird angle. No, there's never been a doctor anywhere that's used that as their doctor picture, their official doctor picture.
Well, was he preying on, the elderly who couldn't see very well?
I don't know.
And to them, it's like, boy, he looks like a teenager, but you know what? Look at me.
Right.
Where did he get that taken? Like the kids' studio at Sears?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
All right. I'd like to think I would not fall for it, but again, a vulnerable position.
Root Photography, that's who did it. The same people that do all the class pictures when you're in grade school.
Jenny. Hi, yes. Jenny.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, I am 77 years old.
Yeah.
To me, everybody looks like they're underage.
Not everybody.
At my kids' parents' night.
Under 50.
Seriously, kids' parent night. I saw one of Dylan's teachers, and I kid you not, she looked like she was maybe 16 years old.
Well, and that's what I keep thinking. I go to the school. I go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Everybody I see.
Well, be careful.
But, Jenny, do you have kids or grandkids? You have grandkids, right?
I have great-grandkids.
Great kid. All right. Is it either a grandchild or a great-grandchild who's closest in age to 18? Do you have somebody who's around that age?
Yes, I do.
You could tell that child is not a doctor by looking at him or her, couldn't you?
Well...
Maybe not.
Maybe because they're you know related them. To me.
Yeah, all right. All right.
My 16-year-old son looks like he could be 24.
He well, doesn't look like he could be a doctor.
Well, he wouldn't want to be.
No. All right.
But if you can do what you want to do. So.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, be careful out there,
Jenny. Be careful, Jenny. Why did we just say to her to be careful? What happened?
Because there are people out there pretending
they
to be
take
doctors.
Take advantage of her.
And
all
unless
right.
Bill Leff accompanies you to your appointment.
That's a service I now provide.
Do
if
it.
You, if you want me to come to the doctor with you to make
check
sure they're
out.
Up to snuff, I will do that. I'd be happy to do
he's
that
too
for
young
you.
To do snuff.
He is. All right. We are going to take a break and then some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We have a couple of texts that I would like to relay to everyone about the doctor. The doctor is in.
Dr. Malachi Love Robinson. He's an 18-year-old, a South Florida teenager, currently in jail because for the second time in a little over a year, he has pretended to be a doctor and he is not a doctor. The first time he pretended to be an OBGYN, this was at the St. Mary's Medical Center. He was not an OBGYN, so they made him shut off his practice. And now he is pretending to be a holistic medicine doctor. He opened up his own clinic. He's ambitious.
But then he is also a minister, too. Didn't you
yes,
say that?
He is. He says, they talked to him, and he said that he is also an up-and-coming minister at the New Birth Outreach Ministry in Florida.
Okay, read the name of the clinic.
The clinic is the same, right?
I know.
It's New Birth.
So
yeah.
He's now just, how does he do this? Somebody suggested that when patients came in, he probably asked for the symptoms and then excused himself to the back room and right. WebMD'd it.
Right.
Well, it could be this. Let yeah. me get my clipboard. Somebody said, Wendy, I agree with Bill. Seeing this kid on your Facebook page, I would ask to see the real doctor.
There's no way I would see a guy like this. And I know that Doogie Howser was on TV. And I know that there have been doctors who have been younger. But this guy, he doesn't even look 18. I'd be so suspicious of him.
815 wouldn't have fallen for it. He said you would think people would question the prescription written on a sticky note.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, you have a new entrepreneurial business where you are going to escort people to a doctor's office to make sure they're legit.
Yeah. I'm only doing it within a 40-mile radius of the city.
40 miles
yeah,
is a lot.
I can't. Well,
just
thanks.
Go 5 miles.
Yeah. I want people to get the most out of their medical care.
815 says in the movie Catch Me If You Can, Frank Abagnale Jr. Jr. worked as a doctor, a lawyer, and as a co-pilot for a major airline all before his 18th birthday. Master of deception, he was also a brilliant forger whose skill gave him his first real claim to fame at the age of 17. Frank Abagnale Jr. became the most successful bank robber in the history of the U.S. And that movie...
Catch Me If You Can is the movie that Leonardo DiCaprio played Frank Abagnale in. I had him on at the last station you and I worked at, and an incredibly nice guy, and now devotes his life. He works with companies trying to foil people doing that sort of thing.
Oh, he's like, why was that, to avoid a jail term?
Yeah, kind of. There was a plea bargain where I think he served a very small amount of time. I think he did go to jail for a very, very small amount of time. But the deal they made was he would be a consultant and he'd be brought in to situations kind of like this one to try to make sense out of it all. Very savvy guy, obviously.
Would you have known he was 18 if you went to visit him?
Frank Abagnale?
Yeah.
I don't know, because when I saw him, he was in his late 40s or early 50s.
So he says.
Right. He could still be scamming me. I don't know.
I didn't see that movie.
Oh, you'd love it.
I will see that. And this is a for real deal?
Frank Abagnale
yeah.
story? Oh, yeah. It's based on a true story. It really happened to him. Yeah.
And somebody wants to know, where did this kid get the money to open up and pay his staff, let alone how does he process insurance? See, that's what I want to know, too. If you're a holistic place or really any doctor's office, you can say, I'm not in any insurance plan. So it's cash only.
You could do that. That's the part I can't, well, there's a lot of this I can't figure out. I can't figure out how it went on this long without somebody figuring it out. But yeah, there's a lot of money floating back and forth in a situation like this.
And why was he in it? To truly help people or to get money? or to get a look-see at some ladies?
On the first one, I might agree that that might have played a part in it. But if you're like a holistic medicine doctor, I guess occasionally you might see a lady without her clothes on. But it's not like Mardi Gras.
Yeah, because there aren't any beads.
No, there's no beads. It's true, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, this couldn't be more disturbing. Now, this guy Kent, Dr. Sebastian Kent, he commented further. They asked him about his personality, Malachi Love Robinson. Here's what he said. This guy can schmooze his way around. He can tell any story that you want to hear. That's what he tried to do with me. He tried to ingratiate himself with me so I would take him around. And then after a while, it started to make no sense to me, and I thought that something was wrong. So he's one of the reasons that Dr. Malachi is no longer in practice, I guess.
God, how many people did he dupe? And will he do it again?
Yeah, twice within a year and a half. I have to think they have to give him a stiffer penalty this time, or he'll just keep doing it, right? It's like a revolving door for this
kid. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
All right, we need to take a break, and then we're talking to Ryan Burrow about a mysterious thing going on in Michigan.
Yeah, if you don't know this story, wait till you hear this. This is amazing, and it's unexplained. Who knows what's going on?
Is it an X-File, Mulder?
It is an X-File. It's an X-File. So we'll talk to our own Ryan Burrow in just a little bit. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Hello, Wendy, Mulder.
Do you call
me Scully.
Do you like your unexplained stories? Do you like your stories where you can look at it from any direction, and when it's all said and done, you go, well, that's just impossible. That can't be.
The truth is out there.
Ryan Burrow joins us right now by way of the telephone to tell us just such a story, and it's in a neighboring state, too. It's happening right there in Harrison Township, Michigan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
Excellent. Couldn't be better. We know the story that you're about to discuss with us, and it just doesn't make sense. Go through the paces of what's going on there in Harrison Township, Michigan.
All right, Harrison County or Harrison Township, Michigan people wake up, walk outside. They see basically tarry blotches all over everything. I mean, we're talking cars, houses, all over the street, all over the sidewalks. It's everywhere. And it's not something that with a consistency that we're too familiar with. It's kind of petroleum-based. It's black. It looks like someone took a massive paintbrush and just splattered about 5 to 7 houses with some kind of black goo. And they don't know what it is.
Is it completely covering the house, or are there
it's
just little
speckled.
Splotches here
no,
and there?
It's just speckles. And, I mean, they're pretty decent-sized chunks, but, I mean, it looks like pretty decent size, like quarter size, just splotches over everything.
I know we've all heard about the blue ice, which is from the
from airplanes.
Yeah, from the lavatories an airplane. But I mean, wouldn't one assume that this is some kind of oily gunk that's fallen off of a plane?
Yeah, you know, and that might be ultimately what it comes down to. There is an Air Force base nearby. They sent out an environmental researcher to kind of figure out what the heck it was. They do have some low-flying aircraft in that area, but the consistency seems to be different than some of the other stuff we've seen falling out of the sky before. So just a lot of people with a lot of questions. It's kind of weird, though, because people keep picking it up with their hands and touching it, and,
The
firefighters came out. Didn't think that it was toxic, but, until you get confirmation, I don't know if I'd be touching that.
Why would you touch it? What if it burns through your system or your skin like an acid? Why
right.
would you touch it?
Well, you know, on the other hand, too, it's all over everything. So, I mean, it's kind of hard not to touch it. There are cars that are just, they look like they've, gone through an anti-car wash, essentially something that just throws dirt all over the car. So it's a really, really bizarre story. And, the stuff is kind of drying up. It's going to take a long time to kind of power wash everything down and get it clean again.
Ryan, what does it taste like?
we'll have to do that experiment once we get
it. You know, the strangest part is they don't know what it is, but they do know that it's safer to consume than the drinking water in Flint. They've figured that out immediately.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I mean, but obviously they're taking samples and, isn't some scientist going to examine it
sure.
and try and figure out if it's, you know, from this world?
If it's toxic or not.
Yeah, that's what scientists do. They'll figure out if it's from this world, and then you know, we'll all move on with our life. But really, the trauma is what really this story is, right? You wake up one day and you find black stuff all over the place.
Does insurance cover that?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
That's a great question. I don't know what the exact damage will be. I'm sure the surveyors will be out there inspecting, you know, the cost of the car washes. We'll have to see.
It depends on your insurance, if you have gunk insurance or not. That's what it boils down to. Kevin and I watched a report from the Detroit, one of the Detroit news stations, and they were saying that people are outraged, that they're furious about this. Are they outraged and furious, or are they more curious and can't figure out what's causing it? What's the mood of the people out there, Ryan? Do we know?
It seems to be more outrage over the fact that the government hasn't come out and A, figured it out, and B, told them whether or not it's safe.
Right.
We know how the government can respond. We've seen that in Flint. you know, so it you know, obviously people are frustrated that, you know, they don't know exactly what it is. And I believe I know the story you guys watched, if it's the same one that that I saw with the woman who says it can't be bird poop because
right.
Because why? Because
it's a great line. Just the way that it would have taken an incredible amount of birds. Let me just say that it just based on
it is all over the place. I am looking at it
everywhere. I mean, you would have had to have flocks upon flocks upon flocks of birds that no one knew were there. For it to cause that kind of damage.
And Ryan, nobody saw it actually drop. There was nobody outside at this point. It just, they woke up and
no,
it was there.
No, they
what?
Were frozen by aliens when the aliens drove by and, or flew by, I guess.
Oh, that makes sense.
I know it's called gunk, but I'm wondering if Gugon would work. I know it's not goo, but seriously, I'm wondering if it would take that off of cars. Because the paint job on the cars, that's ruined.
I know. It looks like it is. Yeah.
Maybe it works like, maybe you just do tomato juice. Maybe it's like skunk. You put a little tomato juice on it and take care of it.
Ryan, what happens next? What do they do now to help solve this horrible mystery that has
fallen? Such a news question.
I know.
What happens next?
Now what?
They wait for the scientists from the Air Force to tell them that, yes, indeed, it did come from a plane, and they are terribly sorry, and they will get it cleaned up. That is my guess as to what will happen next.
Will this become a political issue? You know, the primaries are coming up on Saturday. Sure. Will this be a major issue, do you think, for Saturday's primary?
Hey, I got to tell you, we've got debates coming up in Michigan on the 3rd and the 6th. You know that Flint is going to be center. I think that Gunk Falls will probably be question number two. I think it'll probably go Flint, Gunk Falls, and then Scalia,
right.
Which would probably be the third question, yeah.
630 is saying that this happened over Downers Grove years ago, and it was determined it was airplane bathrooms, and yes, it was black, tarry stuff. And it's just in one area, so it would make sense that that's where the drop happened. Has Dave Matthews purchased a plane, and is he anywhere in the Michigan area on tour?
I just want to put a warning out to all the kids next time it snows out, not to get so excited to run out and stick your tongue out and try to catch drops. You never know what that's going to be.
It could be the end of them. Oh, that's terrible. That's awful. Well, Ryan, this is a story that is as baffling a story as we've heard in the last 15 minutes.
That's great.
I know. It doesn't seem like we're going far back.
And where are you now? You're covering another story?
Yeah, I was just at Hillary Clinton's event here on the South Side. She was at Parkway Hall.
How's that cold of hers? Because she had a very terrible cough, which I felt so sorry for her in the middle of a speech at a podium. Just completely could not control that dry cough. Was she okay today?
We've all been there. Yeah, she sounded great. She didn't bark at all, so that's good. I know we saw that in the news yesterday.
I would just roll with that from this point forward. I would do, like, cat noises now and just keep them coming.
There will be a see and say, like a farmer says, and it will all be Hillary Clinton doing different animal noises.
Geneva Reed-Veal was here. She's the mother of Sandra Bland.
Yes.
She introduced her. Hydea Pendleton's family was here as well as some of the families of other victims, whether it be some kind of police-related victim or, you know, some kind of gun violence. So she definitely targeted her audience. It was a majority African-American audience. She focused on jobs. She focused on gun control. She talked about education, making it more affordable. She took two shots at Bernie Sanders that we had heard previously in the debate, you know, just kind of the fact that I can get this done.
and the fact that he had been criticizing President Obama. And she did take some shots at Bruce Rauner as well. I believe that you may hear that in the next upcoming newscast, if I played my cards right.
Excellent.
I'm sure you did.
We're anxious to hear it. And she didn't go with the she's been wearing yellow in public of late.
She did it once. She learned. She moved on.
No more yellow?
I think she was wearing red.
Oh, okay.
I got to think about that.
It's Valentine's week, so that makes sense.
Sure. All right. But, she's got a fundraiser. She's hitting a fundraiser, and then she's going to get back out on the campaign trail. This was kind of a one-off from the political stop she's been making, but she was in New York yesterday speaking once again to majority African-American communities about these similar topics. She really wants to lock down the African-American vote, especially going into South Carolina. There's still a lot of love for the Clintons among African-Americans, and she wants to make sure to secure that as she goes head-to-head with Bernie Sanders.
Was Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, with her at all today?
I did not see him today, no.
Okay, just curious.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thank you. Boy, you cover everything, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Everything falling out of the sky, everything on the ground, you name it. Haven't gone underwater yet, but we'll work
on
it.
Not yet. Judy Pilek has some plans for you tomorrow. Wait to hear what she's got.
Isn't that polar bear plunge coming up here?
Yes, it is.
I
be ready.
Said too much.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Now his phone breaks up, but that's okay. Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. I at some point they'll figure out what it is. And my guess, if I had to put money down, is exactly what we said, which is some refuse from an airplane. But at this point, they don't know for sure.
Maybe Trump is responsible.
I bet Trump's responsible.
And then he'll blame it
right
on Hillary.
Yeah, that's how it usually goes, isn't it? All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.